them to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show.
Back in your life on this Monday, May 13th, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the show. Hope you had a lovely weekend. What a weekend it was in mixed martial arts. Holy smokes, so much going on. As always, so much to discuss. Saturday night was dizzying. Bellator in Rosemont, Illinois. UFC in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Back and forth I was going. I hate those nights. I mean, they're fun when they're actually happening and there's a lot going on, but you know, when Pitbull and Aldo are walking out at the exact same time, this is not good. I don't like this sort of thing. I like to be able to, you know, give all my focus and attention to one particular fight. In the end, it was an entertaining night. It was a bit of a mixed bag as far as Brazilian MMA is concerned. And of course, the highlight of it all was what happened in the main event Saturday in Rio, UFC 237. Rose Namajunas, for the first round and change, looked better than she has ever looked in her entire career. And when you consider the fact that she had been out for 13 months, when you consider the fact that she had been dealing with a lot in and out of the cage, she had the neck injury, she had the incident in Brooklyn that she was getting over, she looked incredible. She looked like she was at a different level, like it was a pro fighting an amateur, in my opinion. It was a masterclass. It was a virtuoso performance out of Rose. She was quick. She was on point. She was focused. Her foot movement, her head movement, her jab, it all looked beautiful. She was putting it together beautifully. Wow. And so much was made of the fact that she was going to Rio, enemy territory against Jessica Andrade, and Andrade looked so good since dropping down to 115 in her last three fights, and she just looked amazing. And then, of course, in the second round, she gets slammed on her head, and she gets knocked out, and she loses the title. And so a lot of people thought, what the heck was that? Was that illegal? No, it was not illegal. It was absolutely legal. Had she let go of the submission of the arm, she probably wouldn't have been slammed. She wouldn't have been knocked out. She held on to it, and she was slammed and knocked out. And that's just the name of the game. Jessica Andrade's nickname, by the way, is Pile Driver. She's known for doing things like that, and that particular maneuver is 100% legal. So take nothing away from Jessica Andrade. That doesn't mean I don't feel really bad for Rose Namajunas on this Monday. I feel like she was just en route to a great performance. And maybe the tide was starting to turn a little bit, but that first round was just incredible stuff. And then how about what she said afterwards about, you know, kind of being relieved about maybe not wanting to do this anymore? We've heard the saying, heavy is the head that wears the crown. We've heard UFC champions in the past say this as well. I'm not that upset. There's so much pressure on these fighters as they climb the ranks. There is such an incredible toll that their body takes as they try to get to a title fight. And then once you get that title, once you win it, there's a boatload of people that are coming after you that are trying to knock you off your perch. And then you have to try to, you know, get the money that you think that you are owed for all that time, all that effort, all those hours in the gym. And that's its own kind of war. And then you have to keep that money because if you lose the belt, you're all the way down the ladder. I mean, there's just so much pressure. It's such a strain on one's mind. I think that's really what we saw on Saturday. A young fighter who's in her mid 20s who just said, you know what? Maybe this is just a little too much. I don't know if this is the end for Rose, and we'll talk about it certainly on this show, but all week long on our other shows as well. But I'm not surprised to hear her say that. And I just think she maybe needs a little bit of a break and some time out of the spotlight and then come back and work her way up, because I certainly hope we can see that Rose fight again, the Rose that we saw in the first round. So that was notable. Of course, Anderson Silva losing to Jared Cannonier, notable as well. Anderson looking very much 44 years young or old, I should say, at this juncture. Big win for Jared Cannonier. Jose Aldo losing to Alex Volkanovski, who is now 20-1 in his career, 7-0 in the UFC. A win over Jose Aldo in Rio. Wow. What a performance out of the Aussie over in Bellator. Like I said, Pitbull defeating Michael Chandler in a matter of seconds, somewhat controversial, but I liked the win. I thought it was the right call. I had no problems with it. Douglas Lima knocking out Michael Page. Jack Swagger defeating the legend TJ Jones, the beef planter, whatever that was. I mean, that was just bizarre stuff, but also supremely entertaining and fun. AJ McKee winning. So much happening in the world of MMA. And of course, we set our sights on Rochester this weekend. UFC returning to the great state of New York. First time in Rochester, though. And the main event is Kevin Lee making his 170-pound debut in the UFC against former lightweight champion Rafael Dos Anjos. A very sneaky card, by the way. Look at that card. That card is fun. I like that card a lot. Felicia Spencer making her debut against Megan Anderson. There's a lot to like there. Sage Northcutt making his one debut this weekend as well. There's never downtime in this sport. I mean, just look at that lineup. That's a fun lineup, by the way. Vicente Luque, great win back in February against Neil Magny. Antonio Carlos Jr. against Ian Heinisch. Megan Anderson fight that I mentioned, Charles Oliveira, Nick Lentz, fun, Austin Hubbard, fun, Davey Ramos, fun, a lot of fun. All right, here's today's lineup, and then we shall get to our first guest of the day. The aforementioned Jared Cannonier will join us at around 3:40 p.m. Eastern time. The Killer Gorilla walked into Rio. Again, much like the Andrade fight, people want to take the win away from him. That was not a freak accident. That was not Anderson just slipping on a banana peel. He attacked the leg and eventually injured the leg, damaged the leg, and won that fight. Fair and square. What a win for him. Didn't have his luggage all week in Brazil. Didn't have his mouthpiece, his cup. Went in there, no problems. Big win. And then he shoved it right back at the people, booing him, disrespecting him. Just let it soak in. It was wonderful stuff, top to bottom, from Jared Cannonier. The aforementioned Kevin Lee will join us at around 3:20 to preview his welterweight debut against Rafael Dos Anjos. Fun fight. I like this fight a lot. I'm looking forward to it on Saturday. How about Stipe Miocic returning to the show? He meets Daniel Cormier, of course, on August 17th in Anaheim, the rematch for the heavyweight title. Haven't talked to Stipe. In fact, I don't think he's made any public comments, maybe an Instagram post or something, since the fight was announced. So I'm looking forward to this. Jake Hager, a.k.a. Jack Swagger, will join us at around 2:45. He got the win on Saturday against the aforementioned TJ Jones. First round submission, now 2-0 in his Bellator career. And dare I say, Jake Hager turning heel. And dare I say, that's a good move for him. It's a more natural persona, if you will. I don't think he was acting necessarily, but he's just, you know, he's kind of like Biff from Back to the Future. Better as a heel, in my opinion. Mike Doce will join us at around 2:20. You'll recall last week we had George Lockhart on the show, called him out, said he wants to fight him in August. Well, we are about to get the response. This is amazing. Nutritionist wars playing out in front of us. What's better than this? He has promised us some fire. I'm looking forward to that at around 2:20. Anthony Pettis will stop by at 2:05. Anthony Pettis, I heard his name over the weekend. Oh yeah, he's fighting Nathan Diaz. August 17th, UFC 241. Anaheim, California. Anthony Pettis, Nathan Diaz, 170 pounds. First fight for Nate Diaz in 3 years. This is incredible stuff. UFC matchmakers, by the way, in that 24-hour span, Friday, Saturday, booked this fight. Also, Tony Ferguson versus Donald Cerrone. Well done. I know you guys don't like me very much, but I got to say, well done. You guys killed it in that 24-hour span. See, I could give you credit because you did a great job. Well done. Anyway, we'll talk to Anthony Pettis about that. Douglas Lima will join us at 1:45, talk about his big win over MVP. And now moving on to the finals of the Bellator Welterweight Grand Prix. And then at 1:25, we'll be joined by Tatiana Suarez, of course, one of the best strawweights in the world. She returns to action on June 8th, UFC 238. She fights Nina Ansaroff in a number one contender fight, at least in my opinion. We'll also, of course, get her opinion on the main event Saturday night between Rose Namajunas and Jessica Andrade. But first, let us say hello to the new King of Rio. Yes, there he is, the one and only Alexander the Great Volkanovski, who on Saturday night marched into Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and beat their native son, Jose Aldo, in a convincing, dominant performance. What a win for Alex Volkanovski. Alex, how are you? Thank you for doing this.
No worries at all, mate. Yeah, I'm very well. I'm very well. Got to stay an extra day here in Rio and just enjoy the place a little bit. So everyone's been nice to me, which is good. I didn't know how they would react with me, but everyone's been friendly, getting photos with me, so it's good, mate. It's good to get a big win like that and now just relax and do my own thing.
Well, congratulations on the win. And I was actually going to ask you about that because I know you did stick around. No one has come up to you and said anything about beating their guy the way in which you did. It's been all friendly. I'm a little surprised, I must admit.
Yeah. No, everyone's been really good. Yeah, everyone's I don't know. Everyone over here knows UFC because, yeah, I've been getting stopped a fair bit. But, I mean, you know, all of that sort of stuff, I don't mind it. But everyone's been very friendly. They even told me, they're like, oh, no, I want Jose to win, but, you know, still give me a thumbs up and want a photo and stuff like that. So, no, they've been respectful.
So a lot is made of the Brazilian scene, the hostile territory, the chants, all that stuff and more. Now that you've experienced it, is it a little overrated? Is it not that big of a deal?
Well, for me, like, you know, I went in there, you know, again, I expected it. Don't get me wrong, the weigh-ins and fight time, they were going nuts, you know what I mean? They were very, very passionate. I remember I was getting flipped off while I was about to walk out and stuff. I had my boys right there and the guy next to him just flipping me off. But, you know, that's all a part of it. You know, I really enjoyed it, the weigh-in, just the walk out, everything. But as soon as I finished the walk, even when obviously when Aldo walked out, the crowd just went off, you know, off the head. But that was unreal. I was giving him a clap in and, you know, I soaked it all up. And then again, like I said, once they're in front of me and we're in that cage, it's just another body, you know what I mean? And it's just, I got a job to do and I don't even focus to anything outside that.
As far as the opponent is concerned, as far as his name, this has to be considered the biggest win of your career. Were you happy with what you did out there? You know, I was a little surprised at the end of the fight, and I know this is done from time to time, but Aldo had his hand raised. It seemed like he was sort of willing it into existence. I was like, I don't know what, you know, planet I'm living on here, but I feel like this is a rather convincing win for Volkanovski, 3 rounds to none. What did you think of the entire body of work? I know you said you were disappointed with the no finish, but the entire body of work, were you happy with it?
I stuck to the plan, the game plan. You know what I mean? I've done everything that I was meant to do. I probably could have capitalized once I had him so worried about what I was doing. I probably could have capitalized a little bit more. But at the same time, you know what I mean? Like, you know, why do I have to take all the risks? You know what I mean? Yeah, I really thought that I would get him a little more frustrated and he would have tried to, you know, strike back and then I could have really, really picked him apart. But, you know, he was being patient and he was just looking for that KO and I could see that. And he was just waiting for the perfect time. But obviously I made that hard. But again, like, you know what I mean? It's, you know, if you know the game, you know that was very technical and you know that I fought a really smart fight. And for people that don't know that, you know, again, you know, they don't really know the game. But that was some pretty high level stuff, I believe. And, you know, I got him going to, you know, what I wanted him to do. You know what I mean? This is exactly how we said it was going to be. A lot of people were saying going into that fight, you know, oh, you're going to have the pressure, he's going to leg kick and all this sort of stuff. And I was just like sitting there going, yeah, it's easy to just throw a leg kick if I'm standing there, you know what I mean? But I mean, if I get him so worried about what I'm doing, they don't pull the trigger. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, you flipped the script on him because in your first 6 UFC fights, you're now 7-0 in the UFC, 20-1 as a professional. First 6 UFC fights, you landed a combined 72 leg kicks. In this particular fight alone, you landed 50 significant leg kicks. That's insane, especially against a guy like Jose Aldo. So you mentioned the game plan. Was that part of the game plan to attack his leg that often?
It was maybe not attack his leg. Like, you know, obviously I wasn't out there throwing big hard leg kicks to like hurt his leg or anything. Like, I had nothing to do with that. It was just making him always adjust, making him always, you know, have something to worry about, something in front of him where, you know, he just wants to explode. So he wants to throw them big counters. So if I'm just standing there, them big leg kicks would have come. But every time I you know, threw a fake or threw something at him, or a little shift or a little bit of movement, he always had to adjust himself and he just could not pull the trigger. And, you know, the only time he sort of could is if he just didn't think or just done something, you know what I mean? So that's what I was waiting for. That's when I would have really capitalized and got the knockout, I believe. But he just didn't pull the trigger so at all. But, I mean, at the same time, that was just because I fought a smart fight. And, you know, again, like, you know, I'm obviously dangerous. I'm very explosive. I've got all the tools, but I'm a very clever fighter. You know, I'm very calculated in what I do, and you got to see that.
Okay, so you mentioned him not pulling the trigger. You know, it's interesting in this sport because the guy goes on a 2-fight winning streak, back-to-back finishes. All of a sudden, everyone's saying, oh, he's back. And then he fights the way in which he fought on Saturday, and it's like, oh, he's old. He didn't pull the trigger, all this and more, and it feels like you don't get the credit that you deserve. Were you surprised by him not pulling the trigger, by the way he fought? It just seemed like he wasn't there, like he never really showed up.
I wasn't surprised because even early in them last two fights, again, like you said, everyone always remembers the finish. So I actually seen a few holes in the last two fights, and so did my corners and coaches. So, yeah, we've seen, like, he's very, very hesitant. He reacts heavy to things. You stand there and give him time to work combos and that, he's just going to fire away, and he's explosive. He's dangerous. But and he's always looking, like for that quick counter. So, it's just it was just a perfect game plan or something that we worked on. Like before he got the KO, he was always hesitant as well, even in the last two fights. But I kept him so busy. I kept him so worried about things, puzzling his brain, and he was so worried about all them stuff. It just made it hard for him to do what he wanted to do. So that's what I mean. A lot of people are going to say that sort of stuff, and I know that. But anyone that knows the game like really well and goes real deep with it, this game goes so deep and people don't know that. But I believe, that I'm on another level and I got to show a bit of that. So you got to see again. I guarantee you he wanted to throw punches or he wanted to throw leg kicks. It probably wasn't part of his game plan. But again, we seen tendencies going into a lot of his fights. And, that's why we done that. And it just worked really well.
So after your win over Chad Mendes in December, that's when you started to talk about Max Holloway, and he responded, "I don't know who that guy is. Who is this guy? You think he knows who you are now?"
Well, he better, because I believe I'm next. You know what I mean? And I'm sure he does now. I'm sure he's probably starting to do his homework as well. So, you know what I mean? I just honestly believe it's a no-brainer. I want to fight. And, again, he's from Hawaii, not too far from Australia. There's an Australia car by before the end of the year's out. You know what I mean? So I just think that's perfect. Get us on a card like that. Well, you know what I mean? Like that'll be a huge card, one of the biggest cards this year, I believe. Let's make it happen.
I don't know if you know this, Alex, but I have been attacked over the past week or so because I am out there. I don't even think I'm saying anything crazy. I don't think I'm defending your honor. I think I'm speaking in facts, in actual logical sense here. You're 20-1. You're 7-0 in the UFC. You just beat Jose Aldo in Rio. In the last year, because I know this has started to become this thing with you and Frankie Edgar, since Frankie last fought 13 months ago, you are 3-0 in the UFC with wins over Darren Elkins, Chad Mendes, and Jose Aldo. I know you know the resume, but I'm trying to educate the people as well. Yeah. I don't understand how this is even a debate. You're on a 17 fight win streak. He's on a one fight win streak. I don't know how else to, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills here, Alex. And I have to say, I'm legitimately worried that they are going to give it to Frankie. And I want to just clear this up right here and now. Frankie's a legend. Frankie has done enough. He has done so many great things in this sport. He should fight for the belt again. I have no problem with that. My main point is your next fight has to be for the title. I don't want to see another Tony Ferguson situation. That is just completely unfair. You have done enough. If they are going to decide between the two of you, I don't understand how it's even a debate. If they want to give it to him because they promised him something, okay, well and good. But how do you feel about the fact that this is even starting to become a debate?
Yeah, you're right. I don't know. Is it a debate right now? I'm not that sure, but I know before I fought, obviously I haven't won yet. So I don't know. I don't know how people are looking. Obviously, I'm still seeing a lot of people saying I'm definitely next. But, man, I got a lot of respect and, I love the bloke as well, Frankie. I'm a big fan of him, what I mean? And I felt bad him taking that risk and losing. But I've been saying all week, why do we call it a risk? If you're going to fight and lose and still get the title, it's not really a risk, but it's a risk. You took the risk. You're a legend for that. What a champion he is for even doing that. But at the same time, it's unfortunate you did take that risk. It didn't end up well for you. I'm sorry, but, I think I'm next. If you want to wait around for after me, then, I'll be happy to fight you for the title, But again, like you said, right now, do you make me wait? Can you really pick him over me right now? I just took out a number one contender. Someone that he's never beaten, He's lost twice to Aldo. Aldo's took out all the other guys. He's number one contender for a reason. Now I'll be number one contender. I just think it's a no-brainer. Like you said, purely if they do get Frankie, it's just a sympathy thing. And is that really how business should work? Man, I'm all about the good guys, Yeah. But sometimes, we get put at the back of the line because we're too nice, mate. It's happened to me most of my career. But now people are starting to take notice because I'm taking out the legends and I'm winning and I'm doing the right thing. Like you said, man, I'm 20-1. I'm on a 17 fight win streak, 7-0 in the UFC. It's a no-brainer. And I'm sorry, Frankie, but I will be shocked if he gets that shot.
Have you been told explicitly that you are next for Max Holloway?
No, I haven't heard nothing yet. So we obviously the fight just happened, but you know we're going to talk to Sean Shelby. My manager's organizing a meeting with him very, very, very soon. So we'll have a sort of a rough idea what's going on. So I'm sure if they weren't planning on doing me and they are planning on doing Frankie, they'll probably tell us that. But again, like, you know what I mean? That's what I'm going to sit around and wait I'm going to wait like a whole year or something, you know what I mean? Because I've got to wait for them to do the title. They're just going to make me fight someone else. Why did I fight Aldo if that was the case? You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense. It's going to be a firecracker of a fight, mate. Me and Max, I'm telling you, like, again, he's a gamer. He's going to be in my face. He will pull the trigger. He will be in my face. He'll be trying to be in my face. But, I mean, mate, it's just that it's a perfect fight for me, you know what I mean? Again, we're both very smart fighters, but at the same time, we're both gamers, and you're going to do a lot of the work for me, and, you know, I'm going to be able to let these hands go. And, you know what I mean, if you're in the pocket with me and you're trying to come forward like that, you know, I think I'll put anyone to sleep if they give me that many opportunities.
You know how political this game can be at times. Is there a part of you that is worried that they're going to come to you and either say, we're going to give him the shot first, you wait, or you can fight someone else, but that it's not a done deal?
Yeah, man, I'll be pretty pissed. I'll be pretty disappointed. But, you know, I mean, I really don't think that's going to happen. So, you know, I mean, I'm going to stay positive. I'm pretty confident it'll be me. And I'm going to keep telling everyone it's me. I'll get people talking about it. Like I said, everyone knows that I deserve. And if they don't, they don't know the game. I just took out number one contender. That's why we do it.
Right. And of course, it appears as though they're going to do Robert Whittaker versus Israel Adesanya, your teammate, later on this year. What do you think a card with Whittaker, Adesanya at the top, and you versus Holloway co-main event, what do you think a card like that could do in Australia in terms of how many people it could bring in, what kind of numbers it could draw? How big could that really be?
Man, that'll be huge, especially this part of the world. Sorry, someone's bloody trying to call me or something like that.
How rude is that?
That's ruining your picture.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah, I think it's better.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, no, look, that'll be huge for this side of the world. Oh, my God. Can you still see me?
Every time someone calls you, it freezes. That's what it does. But
you're kidding, yeah.
Eventually, it comes back.
Everyone's trying to get me before I take off. Yeah, look, man, that'll be huge for the, you know, our side of the world, you know what I mean? Like, look at the card, you know, Izzy and Rob Whittaker, and then having me and Max going at it. I reckon that'll be one of the best cards this year, you know what I mean? Stacked it. And then you could fill it up with Aussies and New Zealanders on one side, you know, versus anyone else around the world. Like, we've got so many good fighters this part of the world now, and we've got a lot of people paying attention to us as well. So that'll be huge, huge. And I think the world will be watching.
I don't think I'm breaking any news here, Alex, but you entered the UFC with not much fanfare. You just kind of, you know, walked through the door and you were a guy who's sort of working his way up. Are you at all surprised by any of this? 7-0 in the UFC, 17-fight winning streak. You're beating legends now. Like, are you surprised at how well things have gone for you thus far in the UFC?
I wouldn't say I'm surprised. No, I'm not surprised. I've always said that I'm not going to, you know, I'm not only here to make the UFC. I'm going to take it all the way. I've always said that even before I was in the UFC, I go, I'm not just going to make the UFC. I'm going to go all the way. And, you know, now I'm there. But at the same time, man, you know, this is why I've been telling people I'm so good at these sorts of things. They've been saying, how are you going to take this crowd and all this sort of stuff? I'm the type of person, I'm just in the moment. I just play what's in front of me. So, you know what I mean? And it just doesn't seem surreal. Like, I just fought Aldo and beat Aldo. You know what I mean? And then now I walk the streets and I forget that I'm a UFC fighter. People with photos, I'm like, oh, you know what I mean? It catches me by surprise still. You know what I mean? I'm just a regular bloke. You know what I mean? I'm going to go home. I see the kids and family tomorrow. I'm daddy. You know what I mean? I'm the family man. Like, that's just how I am. You know what I mean? So it does seem a little surreal to me. Like, again, like, because I just play what's in front of me. And I did just fight Aldo, but I mean, it seems like it didn't happen. But at the same time, I'm not surprised.
You're just the 20th fighter in UFC history, and I mean, the long 26-year history of the UFC right now, to start his career 7-0 or better. Another Australian, George Sotiropoulos, never got the chance to fight for the belt. He was 7-0 to start his career, and I always thought that it was somewhat of a crime that he didn't get the opportunity. So hopefully, you know, things work out for you a lot better than it did for him. Is there anything you want to say to Max Holloway if he's watching this? He's very much on the pulse. Is there anything you want to say to him?
Hell yeah, everyone's going to want to watch us fight, mate. Everyone knows that's going to be a good fight. I think I'm your hardest matchup, so you should start pushing it as well. Don't let it slip away. Let's get it done.
Yeah.
Again, much respect to you. Much respect to you, but at the same time, I want that belt.
I wonder how he feels about, you know, going to enemy territory, sort of doing what Rose did on Saturday and defending the title against, you know, a local, so to speak. Do you think he'll have an issue with that?
Oh, yeah, maybe. I guess so. But, yeah, again, for me, I'll fight him in Hawaii, you know what I mean? Like, but I really want this Aussie card. I just think it makes some sense. But, hey, he's game, man. We all know he's game. He's the type of guy that would do it. But at the same time, that fight will be fireworks, you know what I mean? And, mate, I'm pumped, mate. I'm excited. I'm excited to watch that, and I'm going to be fighting.
And, you know, I got to say, I felt like a celebrity contacted me on Saturday because I got an Instagram post from Lauren Whitmey and Eli Hutchinson, who are getting married. And just when is the exact date of their wedding? These are the lovely people who changed their wedding date. They were supposed to get married on May 11th, but they changed their wedding date. I love the story. I can't get enough of it. So that you could go out and take this fight, and you won the fight. So now I feel like the reception, the party is going to be even better and happier. When is the exact date now?
25th. I hope you didn't get me in trouble there. I'm almost certain it's 25th, but I'm bad with dates and stuff like. But I'm almost certain it was 2 weeks after my fight.
By the way, did you know that Jose Aldo's sister was supposed to get married on May 11th, and they did it a week earlier so that he could take this fight? Did you know that as well?
I had no idea. I had no
Two
idea.
Two weddings wow, changed for this fight.
Far out, you know what I mean? That's a blowout.
Yeah.
See, look, everyone's making sacrifices so I could fight, and so I could fight for the belt by the end of the year.
That's amazing. Let's
just, you know what I mean? It's all happening. And I want to thank you for, obviously, again, you know what's up. You know that I deserve that shot, and I appreciate you saying that. Like you said, you're copping a beating about it and stuff like that on social media. So I appreciate that, mate. But, you know, mate, you're just saying what, you know, it's right. That's that, you know what I mean? Again, much respect to everyone in the division, especially, Frankie Edgar. But, you know, again, I'm sorry, but, you know, me fighting Aldo and me winning was just, I think that's just set it in concrete for me to have that title fight next.
And one last thing before you go, and obviously most important as far as I'm concerned, last time we spoke to you, you were at the hospital with your daughter. How was she feeling? How'd that go?
Yeah, she's fine. She's fine. Yeah, she was, she just had to get like adenoids out and a couple of things. And like, she was just having like sleeping problems and stuff like that. But No, she's much better. So I haven't really got to spend too much time after that. So hopefully the sleeping patterns got better because they're early birds. But the wife's been telling me that they're still getting up early. So I don't know if that operation even worked.
Well, I'm sure they're very excited that you're coming home, especially coming off that massive win over Jose Aldo. I know you have to get to the airport, so we will let you go, Alex. Thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate it. Congratulations. Enjoy the victory. Enjoy the wedding. And, of course, safe travels home.
No worries. Thank you. And again, thanks everyone for the support. It's been amazing. And keep watching because I'm taking that belt.
All right. There he is. Alexander the Great Volkanovski. What a resume that is. 20-1 in his pro career. 17 straight wins in a row. Wow. Wins over Jose Aldo, Chad Mendes, and Darren Elkins just in his last three fights. 7-0 in the UFC. What more does this man need to do? All right. Let's go to a fighter who's 7-0 in the UFC, now to a fighter who is 7-0 in her professional career. I am assuming she was very interested in watching Saturday night's main event because she is one of the best strawweight fighters in the world. She returns to action on June 8th, UFC 238 against one Nina Ansarov. She is the great Tatiana Suarez, who joins us right now via the magic of FaceTime. Tatiana, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. All right. So the last time we spoke to you, Tatiana, you didn't have your fight yet. You were itching. You were ready to get back in there. Before I ask you about Saturday, I just want to know, are you happy with what they came up with? Are you happy with Nina as an opponent?
Yeah, I think it's a good opponent for me, and I think it was the right move.
Why?
Just where the rankings are and how she moved up, and she was on a winning streak. So I thought it made sense.
Last week we had Cynthia Calvillo on the show and she was all fired up. She's been waiting for a fight herself. She wanted to fight you. You recall that. She said they offered her the fight. She was a little banged up. Now she regrets saying no to it. Which one would you have preferred, Cynthia or this fight against Nina?
Oh, they offered her a fight against me?
There was some talk of that, yes. According to her.
Oh, and then she said no because she was banged up?
Yeah, she had to take a shot, but now she thinks that the shot would have been okay in time and she would have had enough time to train and she kind of wishes she didn't know. I feel like you're not really buying this story.
Well, I mean, it just, I don't know, like if she knew she was hurt, why'd she call me out?
Well, I think she called you out in the cage, right? Immediately after her win.
Yeah, but I mean, she didn't know she was hurt yet, or I'm confused.
I like it. I like it. Stirring that pot. That's good, Tatiana.
No, I like legit. Like, I don't, like, did she get hurt after the fight or?
I think she found out about the shot that she had to take after the fight. Yes.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. I'm like, what? She knew she was hurt, but, yeah, I don't know. I don't really, I mean, I wouldn't care either way, you know. I think either of them, you know, would have been a great matchup, and I think it would have been a great show, and I think it would have been a good one for the fans.
Okay, so let me ask you about Saturday night. Did you watch the main event?
I did.
I noticed sometimes you're quite active on social media during fight nights, but this one you didn't really comment on. Any particular reason?
Oh, I was actually at some fights, like a local fight, like a bunch of amateurs and like kids fighting and stuff like that. So I wasn't really able to like be active on social media.
Kids fighting. Mm-hmm. How old were these kids?
They were like 12.
What?
Like the youngest one. Yeah, it was like, there was like 8-year-olds too, but it was really, they were really young. They were fighting. It was like pancration though.
Wait a second. Like in a cage or a ring? Well, like what were they doing? Were they actually?
Yeah, they were.
What?
Yeah. No, they were fighting. Yeah, it's like, you've never heard of pancration?
No, I have heard of pancration, but typically I don't, 8-year-olds, it seems a little young, no?
Yeah, but I mean, they don't hit each other in the head. It's just basically like punching in the body, kicks, yeah. And then obviously, I mean, you know what pancration is. I don't know.
Sure.
But yeah, so I would put my kid in it if they weren't hitting him in the head. That's for sure.
Okay.
So yeah, these kids were like getting down. It was cool.
All right. So what did you think of the main event? What did you think of the fight itself?
I thought it was a really good fight. I thought, you know, obviously I thought what everybody else thought, where Rose was winning and, you know, she just made a small mistake. And then, you know, Andrade was able to capitalize on that slam.
For those that don't know what you're referring to, what was the mistake?
She held on to the Kimura.
Yeah.
I thought she should have let go, especially after the first time she got slammed. But the difference between, I don't remember the first slam, but I thought she kept her head on the inside and she slammed her. So she was able to like hook her head with her legs. But this time Andrade put her head to the outside. And so it made it a little bit more dangerous for her because she didn't have anything to really hook onto.
Were you as surprised as many at how good she looked in that first round? I thought that was the best Rose Namajunas that we've ever seen.
No, I knew she's had a long layoff, you know, and I just knew that she had that distance. She had that. I mean, if you like ever watch her training videos, she does a lot of footwork. She does, you know, a lot of drills, like in terms of her footwork and her jabs. I mean, she just does a lot of, she uses her range really well, and I wasn't surprised. That's exactly how I thought the fight was going to go. And I thought, you know, Jessica could overwhelm her with her pressure and get her to the fence and try to, you know, get her down, and that's kind of what happened. But I didn't expect, like, a KO slam. That's, I mean, no one went in there like, oh, I think she's going to KO slam her.
Right.
That's what I thought. You know, I thought, you know, Andrade would put a lot of pressure on her because she does have a gas tank. And, you know, I think, but Rose was dealing with it really well. You know, she was moving just like she always does. And I thought she fought a really great fight. That's why, you know, afterwards, and they were talking to her and then she said she didn't know if, you know, she was going to do it anymore. But I mean, if your heart's not in it, I understand, you know, but I don't think she has anything to like be down about, you know, in terms of like her performance at all. She did a phenomenal job.
I was talking to Daniel Cormier afterwards, and he told me that he thought the tide was turning in the second round, that eventually Andrade would wear her down, and if not in the second round, maybe third or fourth, beat her. Did you get that sense as well? I didn't feel that. What did you think?
I did get the sense of that just because of the pressure that Andrade was putting on her. And fighting backwards is a lot more difficult and a lot more tiring than fighting forward, you know? So, And Andrade was getting those leg kicks in, so I don't know how, you know, I don't know how much, you know, in terms of like leg kicks, how much it will affect her, you know, because she is really good at moving and stuff. I don't know if those leg hits landing were going to eventually limit her mobility and her footwork and stuff like that. So I don't know. I mean, Andrade, you know, she fought a good fight, but she definitely was getting outclassed in terms of, you know, the technique part of it.
So we just saw photos of the finish. It's hard to watch. It's brutal. It could have turned out way worse for Rose. Do you feel like that should be outlawed? Do you feel, I mean, it's not illegal. She did something that was perfectly legal, but it has brought up this debate about whether or not this should be looked at. What do you think?
Well, it was really scary to watch, you know, someone get slammed on their head. Just like, it was the way she slammed her was just like incredibly scary. You know, it was almost like, it looked kind of, I mean, if Rose wouldn't have tucked her head, it could have been a spear, you know, or is that what they call it, spiking?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's very dangerous. I don't know. I definitely don't slam people like that. not even in the gym, not even in a competition, just because I don't do that. But, I don't know. It's kind of, seems, I mean, some people, I don't know what to think, to be honest.
I mean, that is her nickname. Her nickname is Pile Driver or something like that in Portuguese. So, and as you mentioned, she tried to do it earlier as well, but, I just feel like, of all the crazy things that can happen in our sport, the potential for disaster and serious injury, life-altering injury, could come from a maneuver like that. Luckily, we haven't seen it too often. I think there's 11 total. That was the 11th finish like that in UFC history, just the fourth in a UFC title fight. But, man, it made me a little uneasy afterwards.
Yeah, it made me feel that way too. But I would never, you know what I mean? Like, I never know. Like, I don't know. I just never know what to think. Like, I feel like, I don't think it should be illegal, but I don't know, you know, what other people want or think.
You seem to be very close to fighting for the belt. Was there any part of you that was disappointed to see Rose lose? Because right now she's a lot more known, popular, and perhaps you wanted to be the one to defeat her.
Yeah, I did feel that way. You know, and also like, I respect her. I mean, I respect both of them, you know, but I definitely wanted to, fight her. But right now I'm just looking towards, you know, Nina right now, focusing on that. Like, I'm not looking past her. Everybody's like, you know, naming my name for the next rematch. And I'm like, I haven't even fought yet, you know, but I understand where they're coming from. You know, they believe in me and they think like I'm the next champ and stuff. But, you know, right now I'm just focused on my fight, that I have ahead of me. And, that's what I'm going to do. You know, I never look past anybody and I treat them as if, you know, they're going to try to take something from me. And, I mean, yeah.
Has that been a struggle, you know, with everyone talking about how it seems like, almost feels like people are already crowning you the champion before this fight, and you still have at least one more fight before you're considered for that title fight? Has it been weird having people talk about you like that and you having to, like you just did with me, remind them, like, wait a second, I still have one more fight before I even potentially get to a title fight? Does that play tricks on your mind at all?
No, because I'm very, like, whenever I see it, like somebody, I know this is a for sure thing, you know, like this is the person who they've put in front of me and they're saying, you know, this is who we have to get through next. That's like my, you know, that's my focus right now. So I don't know if you caught my tweet, but I tweeted focused. And the reason I did that was because a lot of people were putting my name out there and I just wanted to remind them that. And I put hashtag June 8th because of that, because I want them to know, like, I'm focused on what's ahead of me, and that's June 8th.
Okay. And I was just curious, I know you just brought it up, but Rose's comments afterwards about feeling relieved that she doesn't have, I mean, you're in a much different spot, you've never won a title. Is there any part of you that sympathizes with her, that has any idea, you know, what she's feeling right now, or is that a completely foreign concept to you?
I understand what she's saying when it comes to, like, she said, like, you know, everybody's out there, like, chasing this belt, and, you know, I've had it, and I understand, like, it's not as it's not as big as like everybody thinks it is in terms of like, you know, she's like, it's just a materialistic thing. And to, when you want to do things outside of MMA, you know, to you, that really doesn't matter. I'm not like, oh, I just want that belt, like just the belt. You know, me, it's like, you know, this is what I truly believe that is part of my, you know, what I'm supposed to do in life. I feel like this is something I really need, want to do. This is something I feel like I've been made for. I've been doing, you know, I've been wrestling since I was 3 and a half. It's really a big, huge part of me. So for me, I understand what she's saying and I can understand where she's coming from because of course, like, you know, all these tournaments that I've done when I was a kid, like I've discussed this with my coaches. Like I'd get a medal and I'd be like, eh, like I wouldn't even pick it up, you know, like to me, it wasn't about the medal. To me, it wasn't about those, you know, the trophies. It was just because I loved it. It was something that I loved to do. And if her heart's not in it, then I can understand why she's just like, I really don't care about the belt. I'm happy that, you know, this is like off of my shoulders. Now I can just focus on. If that's where her heart is, then, you know, I completely understand and what she's coming.
Did we lose your audio? I think I lost you there at the last 10 seconds. You back?
Uh-oh. Back. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah. I just said...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Oh, no. I just said that that's not where I'm at personally in my life. Like, this is... I still have more to accomplish, and I believe I have a lot more to accomplish.
I have to say, and I don't want you to look past Nina, but the potential for a Jessica Andrade versus Tatiana Suarez fight, I mean, considering her style and how aggressive she is and how good she's looked as of late and your style, your background, I mean, I just feel like this is like the irresistible force meeting the immovable object. Like you two are just on a collision course. That's what it feels like to me. Do you know what I'm saying here? There, it feels like something like insane is about to happen with you two potentially in there.
Yeah.
You don't share my excitement for this?
Are you saying we're a car crash?
It kind of feels that way. You know what I feel like? I feel like it's like two Rams. You know when the Rams go and they like explode back? I feel like that's what you two are. I feel like you're on that kind of collision course.
But you feel I'm not me on a Ram. This.
Like you're just going to like...
Yeah. No, I get where the excitement is coming from. Everybody's been like saying, you know, I want to see you fight Jessica Andrade. And, you know, I think she's a little, you know, a bulldozer. I put a lot of pressure on people as well, obviously, but mine's just in a different type of form. Obviously you guys can tell the difference in the, I would say mine's more a little bit technical. Hers is like just power and brute, you know?
So what you're saying is she's not on your level. She can't hang with you. You're at a much higher class. Is that what you're saying in a very, very nice way?
I did not say that. I just said that that has a different style, you know, like kind of like John Lineker. She's kind of like the John Lineker of the division. And who did he fight? Did he end up fighting Demetrius or anybody like that?
He fought
Henry, right?
Yeah, well, and he just fought Corey Sandhagen.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's different. Corey Sandhagen's, he's also very technical. He's amazing. His striking is great.
Yeah.
I want to give him a shout out.
All right, I'll give him a shout out too. And by the way, Corey Sandhagen says, don't use paper towels, all right? So if you're a paper towel user, don't do that because he says it ruins the environment. What if Jessica Andrade tried to slam you like that? Would she even fathom doing something like this?
I'm sure she would. I mean, she's not, I don't think she's, you know, scared to wrestle with me, but, I definitely know the defense, to that. I've been wrestling for a long time. So I already showed my coach what I would have done. And he was like, oh, he's like, that's dope. That makes so much sense. And I was like, yeah. Cause I mean, I wouldn't have, went to the Kimura anyways, so it would have been different. You know, the situation would have been a lot different.
What would you have done?
I know what I would have done, but I'm not going to tell. Well, do you think she could translate this? No,
she
I'm just kidding.
No, she doesn't speak English. You don't have to worry about her.
I would have taken her back off of it. I would have stepped to the side. I would have stepped to the side. My body would have been, because she had the head on the outside. I would have stepped out with my right leg. If she had this leg, or if she had this leg, I would have stepped to my left side and went in the crotch and then took her back.
Wow. Are you kind of relishing being in that position potentially and showing everyone how it's done?
I mean, I gotta get through Nina first eventually. You know. But I'm just saying, I know what I would have done personally if I was in there. But I mean, just like, you know, Rose is different. She's more like jiu-jitsu, you know, so she's countering with her jiu-jitsu. I would have countered with my wrestling. So it would have just been a different kind of, you know, scramble.
And again, don't want to look past Nina, but we did hear a lot from Michelle Watterson over the past weekend, and she says that she should be next. What happens?
Oh, yes. All the strawweights think they should be next. Joanna.
Yeah.
Even though she's out there vacationing, thinks she should get the next shot. I'm like, what are you, like, I don't know. She's just like, I understand, you know, she's like, I just beat her and stuff, but I mean, she hasn't even fought at strawweight, and her who lost to, who did she just lose to?
She lost to Valentina. At 125, yeah.
Yeah. And then I think before that, who did she fight? Anybody? No.
Well, she lost to Rose
Tisha,
twice.
Right? Yeah. And then she fought Tisha.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't think, like, I think she makes her, you know, her statement that, you know, she's defended multiple times. But the division has grown since then. So that's all the only thing, you know, there's new faces out there. So why not give you know, us a chance to prove ourselves. And then if that happens, then she could face one of us instead of, you know, just jumping on it because I don't know. But, let's see. And then Michelle Watterson, I'm.
Oh no. You paused, right? You were about to say something. You paused there and then it froze on us. You said Michelle Watterson. Then I felt like you were about to say something good. You're back. Are you back?
No, yeah, she just likes to. She likes to pretend there, like as if I'm the boogie woman or something. But I'm here, so yeah. She actually likes to pretend that she doesn't know who I am, and might joke around and say that in interviews and stuff. But I'm here, so and if we fought, she'd definitely know who I was.
Oh, so you feel like she's sort of ignoring you because she wants nothing to do with you? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the feeling you get.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. All right. So you're saying come June 8th or June 9th, everyone will know and it'll be your time.
Yeah. That's what I, you know, with me, like I don't go out there on, like I don't go on social media. I don't make a big deal. That's why, you know, I probably don't get as much attention as, you know, other people in the strawweight division because I'm not, I don't have a big mouth, you know, I'm not sitting out there going, you know, I would whoop you, I'm just not, that's not how I am, that's not my personality, and even if I try to be, it wouldn't be organic, it'd be fake, you know, so me, I'm going to stick to who I am, who I truly am, and just show everybody with my actions, you know, I haven't called anybody out, really, and I just, like, I'm just, you know, trying to prove myself at this division and show everybody I'm the best in the world, and, you know, come June 8th, I'll show with my performance that, you know, I truly deserve a title shot, you know, I'm not out here getting, you know, slight decisions and stuff like that, I'm getting finishes and I'm dominating these girls. So I think in terms of that, that makes me a better candidate to fight for the belt because I'm dominating everybody, not just getting decisions and, you know, barely scraping by. So I think that speaks volumes. And come June 8th, I will put on a good performance and show everybody why I deserve the next title shot.
All right. I love it. It took us a while there, but you finally got warmed up at the end. Great stuff, Tatiana. June 8th, I look forward to it. The return of Tatiana Suarez. Thank you for doing this. Best of luck to you in the last couple of weeks of training. We'll see you out there in Chicago.
Thank you.
All right. There she is, Tatiana Suarez. Yes, took her a bit, but bang, right at the end. No messing around. You're on vacation. You're ignoring me. It's not going down like that. 4-0 thus far in the UFC, 3 out of the 4 finishes, win over Carla Esparza in September. She should be considered. All right. Of course, UFC was in Rio, but over in Rosemont, Illinois, Bellator had their card, and UFC card for the most part, the Brazilian fighters didn't do very well. But over in Bellator, the Brazilian fighters did very well. And we had Pitbull that I talked about earlier, but also our next guest, Douglas Lima, who did very, very well against Michael Venom Page, handing him his first professional loss, knocking him out in the second round. What a performance that was. What a knockout that was. What a highlight that was. Amazing stuff from Douglas Lima, who joins us right now via the magic of Skype. Douglas, how are you?
I'm great, brother. How are you?
I'm doing really well, and thank you very much for joining us, and congratulations. You have had many great moments in Bellator and outside of Bellator, but I heard you say afterwards that you felt like that was the best moment of your career. You've won the belt before. Why is this one the best?
Man, you know, every time you get a good finish like that, you know, it's always the best moment. You know, that was the latest, so, you know, I just consider that one the best. Just cause, you know, also Michael Page, an undefeated fighter, you know, never lost in MMA, you know, and I was able to put him out like that. It was good. It was good for me. It was a great moment. You know, the knockout is being talked about. You know, a lot of people are, you know, talking about it and kind of went viral a little bit. So, it's good. It's good for me. It's good for my career. And, you know, make it even better, you know, when I get this title back.
So, like I said, MVP was undefeated, a very tricky fighter, an unorthodox fighter, likes to do a lot of crazy things in there. First round, it seemed like it took you a little bit of time to sort of figure him out. What is it like fighting MVP? How tricky is he in there?
Man, he's a very tricky fighter. You know, I knew in the beginning he was going to be very fast, you know what I mean? So I just try to stay patient, you know, that whole time, you know, try to land a few leg kicks here and there. But I knew he was ready for it, and he was waiting for it to counter attack. You know, I think he hit me a couple of times there. And, it was just pretty much figuring it out, waiting for the right moment, you know, because I knew he was going to be very explosive, very fast. And I said it before, you know, he's a very hard guy to hit, you know. I mean, out of his career, I don't think he has been hit, you know what I mean, because he moves so well. And, I knew it was going to be like that. I had to be very patient. You know, he does his stuff, his dances there to throw people off. You know what I mean? He did his basketball thing in between the first round, I think. Somebody told me that. I didn't even notice it until they told me about it, you know. So I was really focused on him, you know, and on the fight itself and not what he was going to do there, you know. But definitely, man, he's very fast, you know, especially in the beginning. And I was waiting for that.
Yeah, he was sort of mimicking putting a basketball between his legs, and this at times has ruffled people's feathers, and people think it's disrespectful. As someone who has been there with him in the cage, do you feel like it's disrespectful? Like it's always okay once you win, but then you get knocked out after doing that sort of stuff. Like do you feel like this is the sort of thing that shouldn't happen in an MMA fight?
I mean, yes, I could say that, but man, he's been doing that his whole career. You know, I think that's part of his game plan. Because like you said, man, he throws everybody off when he does that. People get mad. You know what I mean? That's when they run into something, you know. You know, the whole goal going into this fight is not letting that go to my head. Because, man, if you get mad inside there, you kind of lose yourself. You lose the game plan. You're going to get caught against a guy like that. So for me, I had to stay focused, you know, don't let that bug me. And I think that's what I did. And because like I said, man, I didn't even notice that he did the dribbling thing until after the fight, until somebody told me. You know, my main focus was just to wait for the right moment and to connect the big shot. And I think I did that pretty good. You know, I stayed calm, you know, and slowly but surely, I had 25 minutes. I knew at one point I was going to connect and catch him.
So right before you finished him, it did seem like he rocked you, like you were a bit on wobbly legs. How hurt were you?
I was pretty hurt, and I was trying to find myself, you know, after, you know, my legs got a little shaky. But still, you know, I stayed composed, you know, and I think he got very comfortable once he connected that, because that landed right behind the ear. I think I ducked, you know, trying to hide the chin, and my hands dropped at the same time, so it connected really good. And I seen after that, he got very comfortable. You know, he put his hand on his knee and he just stayed there. So I was like, all right, he's going to come now. And this is the moment, you know. So I just timed that kick really good, you know, kind of took the legs from under him. And yeah, he came up right at the same time that I threw that uppercut, and it was lights out. But that punch did connect on me. I was a little dazed for sure. And I think I got mad, man. I really got mad after he hit me with that. And then I, you know, got the KO. You know, I don't think I even needed those last two shots because he was out. You know, but at the time, you know, I didn't, you know, I was just going with it, you know, until the referee stopped it and I got it done. It was good.
The finishing sequence happened so quickly that initially it felt like you almost like grazed him, like you didn't fully connect. Right. Did you fully connect?
It did just graze the chin, the chin, but those are the worst shots, man. Like the one that just scrapes, you know, the head, the chin, that's the one that's going to put everybody away. And I threw it very, I mean, I put a lot in between that punch because, man, my hand was all the way back, you know, so it was a hard punch. I think if it would have landed, you know, straight on the jaw like that, I think it would have been a lot worse. But as far as the knockout, that's the one that shakes the brain a lot more, you know, the one that just scrapes. And I think that's what happened there. So I wasn't, you know, I think he was out after I hit it, but I wasn't sure. So I had to throw those extra, you know, just to make sure, you know, because, you know, I knew I had him hurt, you know what I mean? I had to keep punching until the referee stopped it.
Because the knockout came just seconds after he sort of rocked you, were you like 100% there after the fight was over, or did you need some time?
No, I needed a little time. It's like, you know, I got hurt, and then right after that, I KO'd him. So I just, man, after I was done, I was like, crap, let me find myself here. So I just walked around a little bit. And I think they actually made the walkout a lot better. Because, you know, I just KO'd him. Everybody's, you know, screaming, and I was just chilling. I was just walking around, you know. But that's something that I always do. Like, I mean, a lot of times when I get a knockout like that, I don't like to, you know, scream, celebrate too much, you know, when the guy's KO'd on the ground, you know. So I kind of just stay there, chill, let the few seconds, let it settle a little, and then I jumped in the cage. But yeah, it was just a surreal moment, man. It's get a knockout, you know, at the level of fight, you know, that one was, you know, co-main event on a big show, main event. It was just good. It was just good to get a victory like that.
I noticed you guys exchanged words afterwards. What did you say to him? Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember what I said, but I just told him, and like, man, he's also a guy that I respected very much, you know, ever since the first time I ever met him. We're always being cool, always show each other mutual respect, you know, so I just told him to keep it up, you know. That was nothing, you know, he's still the man, you know, and I know he's going to come back from that, you know what I mean? So I was just trying to keep him motivated, because you never know what to say after a knockout, you know. The guy, he was probably still out of it, you know what I mean? Because he stayed on the ground for a little while after the knockout. So I just try to keep him motivated, you know, because I know how it is, you know, to lose with a bad knockout like that, you know what I mean? But I'm sure he's going to come back for me, man. He's a tough guy. He's a great fighter, you know, just the first loss. So I was just trying to keep him, you know, motivated.
I don't know if you saw, but he wrote on Instagram a long message and mentioned that if he was going to lose to someone, he's happy that it was you because he has a lot of respect for you. Did you see that?
Yes, I actually saw it. You know, I actually wrote something back, you know, to him. And yeah, I mean, it's good to get that type of respect, you know, especially from a guy like that, you know, because he's usually not like that against all the guys that he fights. You right. know what I mean? So it's good. It's good to get that respect. And I'm a respectful guy too, man. I don't like the smack talk, you know. I'm just not made for that. I don't know how to do that. That's not me. And I show everybody respect, you know. Of course, when it's inside the cage, it's different. We fight hard, you know what I mean? So it's good to get that type of, you know, mutual respect from fighters.
Okay, so now you move along to the finals. The other half of the semifinals, Rory McDonald versus Neiman Gracie. Are you hoping that it's Rory because he beat you for the title? Do you want that fight?
For sure. If I were to pick, you know, of course I would pick Rory. You know, beat me before in a close decision, you know, so I'm still looking for that fight, for that rematch. You know what I mean? Rory is a game fighter, you know, he's been around for so long. He's got a big name in this sport. So it's good if it's him, you know, but at the same time, I'm not even thinking about it, you know. Let them fight. Let the best man win. The main goal for me is to get the title. Man, I just, I want to get that title back so bad, you know what I mean? I still feel like I'm the champion, you know what I mean? People always call me, hey, champ, what's up, champ? So I was like, man, I got to get this belt back, you know what I mean? But we're in the right track, you know, one fight away. I can't wait for that fight. You know, I'll be there in New York for sure, checking it out. You know what I mean? I think it's going to be in September. They told me it's going to be exactly 1 year, you know, until the tournament finishes. So, yes, I'm looking forward to that fight. You know, Neyman's game too. You know, he's a good opponent. So, yeah, Rory's going to have a really tough fight ahead of him. So let them fight first, you know, and let's see. Let's see, you know, who's going to face me, you know, at the finals. I can't wait. But the main thing is to get the belt back.
So Rory's comments after his fight against John Fitch obviously caused a lot of news and some controversy, if you will. Very interesting guy, fascinating mm-hmm. comments in my opinion. What did you make of them? Do you understand what he's saying? Do you sympathize with him? Mm-hmm. What were your feelings when you heard what he had to say?
Yeah, for sure. I think it was very good that he came out, you know, spoke from the heart. You know, I respect that a lot. Definitely understand him, you know, where he's coming from. I'm a Christian myself, and, you know, every time you really get close to God like that, something changes, you know, like your heart. You just got to change your heart. And I think for him, he just got to decide, you know, if it's really time to hang the gloves or if he can keep still fighting. I know he said something about, you know, he doesn't want to hurt people anymore. For me, it's different because I look at it as a sport. You know what I mean? I respect everybody. You know, when I fight, you know, my number one goal is not to go over there and hurt somebody. I just want to win a fight. You know what I mean? If the guy gets hurt or I get hurt, it's just, you know, part of the sport. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's good for him, and I'm really happy for him that he found that peace, you know, that happiness, you know, in his heart. But it's up to him, you know. He's got to decide what he wants to do. I hope he keeps fighting, you know. He's, you know, not only what I want to fight him again, but I'm also a big fan of him, you know. He throws some exciting fights. I always have, you know. He's a young guy, you know. I think he's still got a lot left in this sport, you know what I mean. But it's going to be up to him, you know, what he's going to do. I hope he comes at 100% because, you know, when you step in there, you're mental. You got to be 100%, you know what I mean, mentally. And, you know, if you go in there thinking about something else, thinking that if you should or should not be in there, I think it's going to be bad for you. Because yeah. Neyman is, you know, he's a young opponent. You know, he's ready. He's hungry. You know, he's got this big opportunity in front of him. You know, so, I mean, I think Rory's got to come 100% on that fight.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier today in my column, I said that if you're not 100% focused when fighting you, who hits really, really hard, that could be a scary thing. So hopefully he, you know, feels comfortable, and if all goes well against Neyman, he'll, you know, be 100% focused fighting you. By the way, I also mentioned that I hate when Bellator and the UFC go head to head because I feel like I can't focus on one card by itself. Does it bother you when you're fighting at the same time as a UFC card? Do you feel like you don't get the attention that you deserve?
Yeah, I do actually. man, so many days in the year, you know, why do they got to put the card at the same time? It definitely takes, you know, more attention out of, you know, certain fights here and there because, you know, some people want to watch one fight, but there's another good one going on at the same time. But even with that, I think that was pretty good. You know, from all I hear, I think my knockout went viral. You know, everybody's talking about that. I think that's the fight that people's been talking about the most this weekend. You know what I mean? But, man, it could be a lot better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If there was just one show going on, if all the focus was just on, you know, one event. So I think it's better if it's just one show at night. You know, it's just, man, there's so many days. You know, they could do it on a Sunday. Or we could do it on a Sunday. You know, I don't like that competition, you know, between events. I think it takes, you know, the shine away from certain fights, you know. So hopefully that doesn't happen again.
I agree. Or just make Fridays Bellator's night because they do so many shows on Friday. Just do it Friday and then have the UFC on Saturday so you're not going head-to-head. I couldn't agree more. Yep. It must have been nice to catch up with your old friend 50 Cent, right?
It was cool, but man, I don't know. He didn't seem too happy after the fight, man.
I know. It looked like he was rooting for MVP. What's up with that?
That's how I felt, man. You know, he gave me, you know, the bottle that he always does, and you know, he went to MVP right away to talk to him. And I don't know, he didn't look that excited. You know what I mean? I don't know what's up with that, you know. But I really think he's a big fan of MVP. You know, he was rooting for him. That's, you know, that's the feeling that I got. But, man, as long as he keeps his promise, you know, and keep that money in there, it's good with me. But, you know, he didn't even share the knockout. You know, everybody shared that thing. He didn't share it.
Wow. So. 50 Cent is a hater.
Come on, 50. You know, got to show some love too, brother.
You don't need him. He's washed up. His career is over. You're on the rise, my man. You're knocking out MVP. You don't need 50 Cent, all right? You've got everyone talking about you. Who needs that guy? He picked the wrong horse. That's what I say. Douglas, congratulations, my man. I'm very happy for you. What an amazing performance. What an amazing win. We'll see you out there in New York, and looking forward to the finale later this year.
Appreciate it, brother, man. Means a lot. You know, it was good. You know, thank you all for the support, and can't wait, you know, to see who I'm fighting next. That's going to be fun.
All right, there he is. Douglas Lima picks up a huge win over MVP on Saturday night. Now he awaits the winner of Neiman Gracie against Rory McDonald. That's June 14th, Madison Square Garden. Finale expected to be around the fall, September, October. And the winner not only becomes the Bellator welterweight champion, but also gets $1 million from the hater 50 Cent. How about that? All right, so more on that later in the coming weeks. But for now, let us turn our attention to a welterweight fight that was put together over the weekend. Everyone going bananas. My social media exploded when this was reported on Saturday, August 17th, UFC 241. It appears as though it will be the co-main event for the Daniel Cormier versus Stipe Miocic rematch. It's going to be Nate Diaz against Anthony Pettis. Holy smokes, at 170 pounds. Now it is a privilege to be joined by Showtime Pettis to talk about it. Anthony, how are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Wow, this is exciting stuff. I mean, just seeing the graphic on our screen right now, facing Nate Diaz, UFC 241, August 17th. This is amazing. When did you first hear that this was a potential fight for you next?
About a week ago, I think. You know, Abe, my manager, hit me up and, you know, said there was talk in the works. But for me, I didn't take it serious. You know, I was like, I'll see what happens, see what other names pop up. And then Sean Shelby hit me up and told me, hey, we got Nate ready to go, co-main event in California. You down? And I said, send a contract.
Wow. And what was your like, what did you think when this was brought to your attention?
Oh, man, a perfect fight for me. You know, me and Nate, we've had beef and drama for a long time. So just something that was supposed to happen a long time ago, and it's finally happening, and at a comfortable weight class for both of us. So it's going to be a scrap.
Could you tell us the history there? Because I do understand it. This is years in the making. Where did this all start between you two?
Man, honestly, I don't even remember. I know I was the champ, and I don't remember when the actual what event took place, but we just always had this drama, and every time we saw each other, it was just always something was going to happen, you know. So it was just one of them things. I think he might have been jealous. I was the champ. He wanted a shot at me. Then he got his McGregor fight, and then he went MIA. So that chapter never closed in my life. So for me, this is something that had to happen.
I don't know if you remember this, but I remember, I think it was UFC 188 in Mexico. I was backstage and you guys were like exchanging words or something like this and kind of had to be a little bit separated. Do you remember that?
Yeah, you know, I feel like Nate always did that. You know, he waited for the kids to show up and then he'd yap at the mouth. I coached against Gilbert Melendez the whole Ultimate Fighter season, not one word, didn't say anything. And then, you know, the camera's around, he has something to say. So it's time to back it up. Everything he's been talking, all the stuff he's been saying, and then all the drama he's been trying to cause at the UFC events, I'm like, all right, let's settle it now. And I'm in the octagon exactly how I want it. And man, I'm excited for this fight. 100% motivated. I want to knock this guy out.
So you kind of feel like he sort of like acts tough in front of the cameras, but then when it's face-to-face, no one's around.
No, I mean, I think Nate is a tough dude, man, but he just turns on for the cameras. It's like for that, for example, for sure. You know, you were interviewing him, or I don't know what was going on, but I'm walking past, and I know Gilbert just lost, I think.
Yep.
And you know, he just started talking. It's crazy, you know. And it was just like another one of the things, like, bro, I seen you the night before. Why didn't you say anything the night before? And I got something to say. So it is what it is, man. I'm not, like, for me, I'm past that drama stuff. But I'm definitely looking forward to what was.
And, you know, we've been down this road. Like, when I reported this fight on Saturday, I got so many comments from people saying, like, I'll believe it when I see it. I don't believe a Diaz fight is going to happen anymore. Do you feel like this is going to happen? We just went through something with Dustin Poirier and the fight never materialized, even though bout agreements were signed. Do you feel like this is actually going to happen?
Well, I feel like he has... Yeah, we don't like each other, man. So I feel like it's not like just a fight for him. This is some personal stuff. So I feel like this is something he wants to do. So I mean, I did what I had to do. I signed a contract. I'm ready to fight August 17th. I will be there. It's on him now.
How do you feel about the fight taking place at 170 as opposed to 155?
I love it, man. It's a real fight. Well, I mean, 155, we'll both be done trying to make weight, and then you know our performances. I mean, obviously we both could fight at 155, but 170, this is a straight up fight.
And so before this was brought to your attention, of course, we know what happened against Wonderboy. You looked so good, and we talked about you potentially sticking around. Was that the plan, regardless of if it was Nate Diaz next or someone else? Were you planning on sticking around at 170? Had you made that decision?
I haven't, man. Honestly, me and Duke just been sitting back and just trying to see what materialized. I mean, honestly, there were some big names thrown my way. Conor McGregor was thrown my way from Dana. You know, I thought that was going to happen in New York, like in August, but then... That didn't happen, so I pulled back. I just sat out for a little bit, just hanging out, training, and then Diaz pops up. So, I mean, it's just perfect.
So I had heard that the UFC was planning to go to New York, but that was July 27th, MSG, and that the Conor thing was a potential there. He actually called you and told you about this?
Yeah, he called me and told me about it. Yeah, asked me if I would take the fight. You know? I want to fight. I want to fight the best. I want to be remembered as the guy who fought everybody, man. Like, I'm close to fighting mostly guys in 155 that are in the top 10. 170, I just started over here, so you know, I feel like there's a lot of good names out there for me to fight.
Would that have been at 155 or 170 against Conor?
I don't know. We didn't get that far. Okay. We just got a date and an opponent.
Whoa, and why did it fall through, to the best of your knowledge?
No idea. He just said, he's like, just stay ready. That's all Dana said.
Whoa, and were you disappointed when it fell through?
I mean, honestly, like I said, bro, I was going to stay busy regardless. Like, July or August was the latest I wanted to fight. So, for me, it was just waiting for an opponent. But when you get names like that, you know, it just makes it exciting. Like I said, I fought everybody. So, like, I need these big names to make me excited.
Considering the backstory with Diaz, and if you had to choose between Diaz and McGregor, which fight excites you more?
Diaz.
Wow, more than McGregor.
Diaz, 100%, man. I just don't like the guy.
Wow, I've never heard you say this about anyone before.
Nah, and that's how it is. You know, I'm not that dude, but this is this one guy I don't like.
Wow, so this is literally years. This is no joke. Like, you're not like playing this up for the fight. You really legitimately dislike this man.
I don't do that, man. Like, I don't come out public. I don't need to talk trash. My fighting style speaks for itself. But me and Diaz just don't. We got problems, and now we get to solve them.
To the best of your knowledge, has he signed his bout agreement? Have they told you this?
No idea, man. I don't ask questions about that dude.
Okay. I had also heard that it's going to be the co-main event. Were you told that as well?
Yeah, my contract said co-main event, so three rounds.
All right. And you are fighting on his turf in California. How do you feel about that?
Oh, man, his turf. I don't think it's enemy territory at all. I got a lot of family in California. You can go. My cousin lives out in a lot of my family are in California. I mean, it doesn't matter to me. Like I said, this is something that I wanted to happen for a long time, and it's finally here. And August can't come soon enough.
He hasn't fought in 3 years. By the time this fight happens, it will be almost exactly 3 years since his last fight. What kind of Nate Diaz are you expecting to see?
I don't even care, man. I just can't wait to put my hands on this dude. I mean, hopefully he's in shape and he's ready to go, but I don't care. Like, when they said his name, send the contract. That's all I said.
Oh, my gosh. I really have never heard you talk like this before. This is amazing. Do you feel like there's, like, a fire lit under you because of this now?
I mean, I already had a fire lit, and my goals are already in front of me, what I want for obviously my career, but a guy like that, you know, I'll fight somebody who's not in the top 10.
Right. I suspect that there'll be some kind of build-up, press conference, whatever. You'll be face-to-face multiple times leading up to the fight. Do you think it will get tense? Like, do you think they'll have to bring more security and things like that for these events?
I don't know, man. I'm a professional. You know, like I like to say, like, you know, I'm not gonna do that kind of stuff. And that's not me. But you know, who knows what he's gonna do? I mean, I'm a man at the same time. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm not looking forward to that part of it. I just want to get to August 17th and you know, put my hands on this dude. But, you know, this is part of the fight game, and we'll see what happens.
And considering the feelings that you have for him, is there any part of you that feels like you'll have to program yourself to not fight emotionally in this fight because you really dislike this man?
Yeah, for sure. You know, me and Duke, you know, Duke, that's Duke's job. Duke's one of the best. Duke knows me more than anybody. He knows what kind of training camp we're going to have for this guy. So, I'll have to be smart. You know, I don't want to go out there and be stupid and fight him dumb. But at the same time, I want to knock this guy out. I only got 15 minutes to do it.
So has he already talked to you about that?
Who's that, Duke?
Yeah, about like that we have to not fight emotionally and fight smart out there.
Nah, I think, you know, Duke knows me, man. Duke knows how to make me fight emotionally when I need to and be smart when I have to be smart. And this is a little bit of both. You know, I want to finish. You know, I'm building off this knockout I just got over Wonderboy. I want another one.
So the fight is August 17th. It's currently May 13th. So that's, if my math is correct, what, 3 months away, essentially. When would training camp start for a fight that is 3 months away for you?
Next week, especially for Diaz.
What do you mean by that?
I'm going right to work, man. I can't wait to hurt this guy. Like, that's how I come into this training camp is like I'm telling you, this is a personal fight for me. So I'm getting to work right away.
Okay.
And there's no weight cut. So I just go into training camp to train for a fight. So I know who I'm fighting. So it's time to get to work.
How much do you weigh right now, if you don't mind me asking?
Probably like 190.
190. Okay. Is that okay?
Yeah, easy.
Easy. And so that's like almost like a 3 month training camp for you. Is that typical?
I mean, for 155, I have to spend the first couple weeks getting down to weight. So, this one's just, I don't have a weight cut really. I mean, by me starting to train, turning out my training, my weight's going to fall off. Cleaning up the diet, 170 is obviously easy cut for me. So yeah, man, I think it's just one of the things. I know the date. I know the opponent. I'm motivated. Why waste time?
Yeah. And let me, I just want to ask again, if possible, because you have said multiple times that it's personal. There isn't a moment where this started or an incident that happened where this started where like the bad blood really began?
I'm sure there is, but I don't remember. It's been a long time, man, honestly. Like, I know it happened on the Ultimate Fighter show, too. Like, I don't remember what happened. On my end, I just don't like the guy. That's it.
And I'm sure you're somewhat prepared with all the theatrics. It's going to be, I mean, when you're fighting Diaz, you're fighting an army, right? You're not just fighting him sometimes, it seems. You're fighting everyone. You ready for all of this?
Man, I've been around the fight game for a long time. I've fought on the biggest stages, fought the biggest names. Say no different. I'm actually fighting backwards for this guy just because I don't like him. So it is what it is.
What was that? You said you're going to fight him backwards?
I'm fighting backwards. Yeah, I mean, I'm ranked in the top 10. He isn't.
Right. Okay.
So I'm like, my goal is to become a champion, and for this one, I don't really care. I want to fight this guy.
When you envision the fight, how do you see it playing out? Do you foresee stopping him early?
I mean, that's the plan. You know, I'm going to go out there and put the hands on him. And, you know, he's a tough dude. I mean, I've seen his fights. He's been around for a long time. I know his strengths. I know his weaknesses. I know what I have to do. Now it's just, you know, time to go make it happen.
I remember when you spoke to us prior to the Tony Ferguson fight in Las Vegas, and you said you were kind of, you know, starting to like the game again and figuring things out in your career. And after the Wonderboy fight, it seems like, okay, maybe you're just taking these really fun fights right now and everyone's really excited about them. It feels like you're in this nice groove. Like, maybe you're not fighting for a title next, but things are going really well. Do you feel that way as well?
Yeah, man, I feel like just the weight change alone just helped out the training camp and just made it more enjoyable again. You know, the weight cuts were, I mean, I went down to 145 pounds. That's a lot of weight that I went down. So, you know, I think we're just on the swing of enjoying it again, training for getting, I'm getting better in my training camps and not just doing weight cuts. So it feels good.
I know for a fact Nate is listening to this. Is there anything you want to say to him?
Show up August 17th, sign the contract. Nothing else.
I can't wait. Thank you, Anthony. I really appreciate it. Good luck to you.
All right, man. Thanks.
Anthony Pettis. Whoa. I've talked to Anthony Pettis a lot over the years. I don't think I've heard him quite like that before. He is a no-nonsense kind of guy. You could tell he does not like Nate Diaz. That is no joke right there. And I believe that the feeling is mutual. And that's how this whole thing came about. Remember, I talked about this last week about how Nate is motivated. Nate is itching to get back. This is not a fake thing. This is not a drill, my friends. This is the real deal. It's going to happen. I mean, of course, things could happen as far as injuries, but like, this isn't just a gimmick. This isn't a promotional thing. This is a real thing that's going to happen. These two don't like each other. It will be co-main event. It will be the co-main event for Daniel Cormier, Stipe Miocic in Anaheim, August 17th. Holy smokes. I cannot wait. Wow. That is going to be fun. And hopefully we could talk to Nate in the coming weeks as well. All right. So that's the story as far as Anthony Pettis is concerned. Speaking of the welterweight division and people moving up this weekend, it's RDA against Kevin Lee. That's the lineup in Rochester. Main event is RDA versus Kevin Lee. While you chew on that, let me tell you about our good friends over at Vivid Seats. Ah, yes, Vivid Seats. We all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on our favorite team, maybe even going to a fight and cheering on your favorite fighters. With Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive 10% off your first ticket order. That way, you can save even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app right now. First-time customers can use the promo code KNOCKOUT. You know to spell that right. KNOCKOUT. For a 10% off your first Vivid Seats order. Every purchase is backed by 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code KNOCKOUT for 10% off your first order on Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Support them because they support us. All right. Last week on the program, we heard from Nutritionist to the Stars, George Lockhart. He came out of retirement. He says, I am fighting one more time. I am fighting in August. And if there's one man that I want to fight, it's Mike Dolce. Let's give you a little refresher if we can. Do we have that clip before we say hello to Mike Dolce? Because we're about to get his response to it all. Here's George Lockhart on the program last week.
A lot of people ask me who I want to fight. And as another food dude, if there's anybody that I want to punch in the face, it might be Mike Dolce. That'd be a fight that I'd want to make. You know, there's a lot of things that he's brought up about me. You know, he's attacked my character. He's attacked our company. You know, Dan Leith, you know, he's my business partner. The guy's, you know, he's a former jarhead. He's a former Marine. My other business partner, Tony Cav, it's a military owned company. You know, Tony Metcalf was one of the first guys in Saudi Arabia. Dan Leith is a Bronze Star recipient, like a former Marine as well. And he goes online and really talks about my entire team.
And now let us say hello to Mike Dolce. There he is, the aforementioned Dolce, who's got a great setup there. Wow, where are you, Mike?
We are in my own studio here in the beautiful beach town of Belmar, New Jersey area. We relocated part of the business to the East Coast. And we built out this amazing multi-use facility. So not quite ESPN studios, but we're not that far behind, my friend.
Yeah, man, this is amazing stuff. Well done and congratulations. Okay, so let us not beat around the bush here. George comes on the show. Let me first ask you, were you blindsided by this or did you have a feeling this was coming?
No, I was completely blindsided. I was in Disney World with my beautiful family, the happiest place on earth. And I get a text message from my good friend, Mr. Ariel Helwani, asking me if I had any comments on the George Lockhart news. And I was completely blindsided, but not surprised because we know the type of person George is. And he's certainly not above digging around in the dirt to try and gain some relevance.
Okay, so the things that he is saying, there is bad blood here, right? You can acknowledge this?
Well, you know, I want to make something clear. Two points I want to make. You know, George had said that I had called him like no integrity George, and that is false. I would never say no integrity George. I call him zero integrity George because this man has absolutely zero integrity, to which I will detail for you here. Now, the next thing is you can make a lot of accusations against zero integrity George. The one accusation that I will not stand for, you cannot say about zero integrity George, is that he is smart. This is not a smart man. to go on Ariel Helwani's MMA show, the biggest show in all of mixed martial arts, and to mention my name, allowing me the opportunity to defend myself, is just a silly thing. I'm sure his business partner, Dan Leaf, is just, you know, beside himself in the situation that he's in working with Zero Integrity, George. But our story does go back to 2013 or so, when Zero Integrity George offered me 50% of his failing business if I would simply ally myself with him, if I would simply lend my name to his to help pull his failing business out of the mud, he would give me a 50% share. That's truly where this started. George alluded to that on your show. I have the emails and text messages and all that to support that. But what I did, I thanked him and I reached out to some of his former clients, to which I'm friends with, and they all told me the way George conducts his business, which is the opposite of the way I conduct my business. So after a few pleasantries with George, I declined respectfully, wished him well, and moved on. Fast forward a few months, and Zero Integrity George then solicits infamous, defamed journalist Ian Kidd to write a series of slander pieces about me, now saying, I don't know what I'm doing. There's nothing of merit coming from the Dolce diet. I'm associating me with PED use, which is categorically false, and trying to build a name for himself. That's where this turned bad. It had nothing to do with me, Ariel. And you probably know me well enough. Those in the industry know me well enough. My name, my reputation is solid. What I do is I suggest many of the athletes work with great nutrition and weight management coaches like Dr. Andy Galpin, like Dr. Duncan French, like Dr. Corey Peacock, like Rob Wolf, performance coaches like Tony Ricci and like Phil DeRue and like Jake Bonacci and Lauren Landau. These are competitors to me and to my core business. I have no problem pointing every athlete on the planet to these great coaches, knowing they'll be in good hands. Zero Integrity George, unfortunately, has proven time and again he is he's unprepared to actually work at the highest level. He does not have the character to work at the highest level. He does not have the scientific merit to work at the highest level. What he did is he resorted to the most distasteful form of self-promotion, and that's through defamation and aligning himself with unscrupulous individuals like the infamous Ian Kidd. And we will talk about that relationship and what they tried to do to me over multiple years while George used in the infamous Ian Kidd as his shield, if you will, as his heavy, to write nasty, slanderous, defamatory statements about myself through social media, through Reddit, through the website to which he was working with for many years. And that is what got Zero Integrity George on my radar. And I'll close with saying my team has a 100% success ratio in working with the world's greatest athletes for over 20 years. Never in the history of my career has any of our athletes ever missed weight or ever been in trouble for PEDs. And that's a fact. Zero Integrity George cannot say that. And I have a partial list of nearly a dozen of his athletes who have missed weight. Some of his athletes who have had PED suspensions. And that's, you know, ancillary, I think, to the main point and my true feelings about him. So the victim, Zero Integrity George, is completely false. And I feel bad for Dan Leaf, a guy I do like, and I did want to address that briefly, and I'll let you jump back in and control your show, Ariel. I'm sorry. No. Dan Leaf, I think, is a great guy, a guy who I respect. I've had little interaction with Dan, but I like Dan. Unfortunately, Dan is in a relationship with Zero Integrity George that is pulling down Dan's credibility, and I think Dan Leaf is stuck in that situation. I have nothing but great things to say about Dan. And if Dan wasn't associated with Zero Integrity George, I'd be pushing athletes to Dan also.
And no need to apologize. You know, happy that you're on the show and able to give your side of the story. And so let me ask you, I mean, clearly there's a history there. At the end of the day, he did call you out for a fight. You are a former fighter. We see your Ultimate Fighter jersey right behind you. You have fought many times. I have your record right here. Hopefully it's not an incorrect one like we had last week. 5-10, I do believe, was your professional record. Is that accurate?
It's slightly different. I've had a few more fights than that. There's a few knockout victories that didn't go on the record, but I have no ego associated with that. I was very happy and proud to have nearly 25 professional mixed martial arts fights. to make that walk and fight guys like Delson Helaeno and Lyman Good and Carl Amasu and Mike Pierce and some of the top names in the division, the top names at the time. And I came through the hard era of the early 2000s as the head strength coach of Team Quest North. That was under Randy Couture. That's when Evan Tanner was still a part of the team. Nate Quarry and Chris Lieben and Ed Herman and Chael Sonnen, they were up and coming kids on the team. And I was a part of that mix in that training room 5 days a week. And anyone who knows the game, this was the toughest team on the planet, the most credentialed team on the planet. Of course, Dan Henderson was there. And this was a bad group of dudes. And I was in that room 5 days a week, every single day, morning till night, training as an athlete, but also training as a strength coach, 40 of the world's greatest athletes. And many people don't know, I was the head strength coach of Team Quest North from 2004 through 2009. People wonder where I came from. I was in the game since the early 1990s, or since the late 1990s, working with elite athletes through Team Henzo Gracie out here on the Northeast. That being said, man, I've been in there. I've been in the wars, in the gym wars, and in the real ring wars. And I do have a history in combat sports, though I don't and I never associated myself with being a fighter. I just love to compete. I love to train. And it's funny that George said he's got to wait until August to get in shape. Man, I'm in shape right now. I'm in 25-minute shape right now. How can a self-proclaimed nutritionist not be in shape? That's crazy. He's got to stay out of the bottle because we all know George spends a lot of time swimming around inside a bottle. He's got to shake that off and get out there and start moving his fat. I'm on the beach 6 miles a day running in the sand. I'm wrestling 4 times a week. I'm training my Bang Muay Thai. I mean, Ariel, that's the one crazy thing. I do this because it's real and because I love it and because I walk the walk. Most of the time people come and see me, I'm just getting done a workout. I'm just going to a workout. And that's another one of the reasons why George is just, you know, he's full of it, man. And he's a joke. I don't take this guy seriously at all. He's been a joke the whole history of my career. Now, here's the problem with George, and I'll use a metaphor. I beat Zero Integrity George in the sixth grade spelling bee. And for the last 20 years, Zero Integrity George has been pining away because I beat him in that sixth grade spelling bee. And he's been so focused on the sixth grade spelling bee, he's trying to beat me at a sixth grade spelling bee. Meanwhile, I have moved on with my life and my career, and I am a tenured professor at Harvard. And that shows the disparity between who we are as men, who we are as professionals, and who we are as citizens of this planet. I'm so far elevated from what this person is trying to accomplish by once again using my name to gain headlines. That's the only way he built relevance in this industry, was by using defamed, convicted criminal Ian Kidd to do his dirty work, to slander me, to defame me. And did you know that they are co-authors on 2 books together? And this is another thing I wanted to bring out, why I say Zero Integrity George. Zero Integrity George and Ian Kidd were publicly working on 2 books together, traveling the world together, staying in fight week hotels together, talking on the phone every single day for hours per week. And this is all public knowledge. This is all on Google. You can all find this. I have all the links and all the sites. I have this information. They were pretty close. And I only say that to show that Zero Integrity George allowed himself to be duped by such a low-life scumbag as Ian Kidd to do his dirty work, but Zero Integrity George has never publicly condemned him, though I called him out for what they did to myself, what they did to Chris Cyborg, what they did to Ray Borg, because as soon as Cyborg fired Zero Integrity George for nearly killing her, Ian Kidd went on the attack and started attacking her. Once Ray Borg fired Zero Integrity George and spoke publicly about how Zero Integrity George failed him, Ian Kidd went on the attack and started attacking Ray Borg and many other athletes. Many other athletes, and there's athletes that didn't want to say anything about their relationship with Zero Integrity George for fear of being blasted by Ian Kidd, who had some power at that time. And if you do a quick research on Google, you'll start to see these articles and these quotes and these threads, some of which he's tried to wipe away. Not George, I assume. I don't think he knows enough to do that, but I believe by Ian or someone tried to wipe some of this stuff away. Fortunately, I have a tech team that was able to pull a lot of this information, and we do have this information available. But I've been quiet, and that's what shows how silly Zero Integrity George is, because he mentioned my name. Instead of just chewing on a little piece of the pie that I was able to build in this industry, he decided to mention my name once again, giving me the opportunity to tell everyone, well, what the real dirt is. I don't care about him. I have nothing to do with him. I will answer questions when questions are asked of him, and that's it. Now, I do know that Zero Integrity George and his team of misfit wannabe nutrition weight management fools do walk around Fight Week hotels and say nasty, mean things about me, because the agents and the managers and the fighters and the other coaches to whom I'm friends with send me text messages and tell me this. So he acts like I'm running around talking poorly about him, which is categorically false. I live in a beautiful home on the beach. I have an amazing family. I am so far away from, no disrespect, running around hotel rooms collecting towels for fighters. This is the sixth grade spelling bee George is still focused on. I'm so far elevated from that with respect that I don't care what he's doing. But I do want the people out there to understand my true distaste for him. And I'm curious as to why the MMA media has not picked up on his failure record. Why is the MMA media not put two and two together and realized Zero Integrity George has the worst record in weight cut misses of any weight management team in the history of combat sports? To my knowledge, Zero Integrity George has had more athletes pulled from fight cards due to medical reasons than any other weight management team in the history of combat sports. I would love to see a journalist go out there and do some research and start to realize Khabib Nurmagomedov, UFC 209, I almost died, Khabib said, while working with Zero Integrity George, and Khabib was pulled from that card. Mike Chiesa, I thought I was going to die, where he missed weight for UFC 226 by 1.5 pounds while working with Zero Integrity George. UFC 223, Max Holloway, hospitalized and pulled from the card for a world title fight. UFC 226, Max Holloway once again, hospitalized and pulled from the card for another UFC world title fight. And don't get bored, because I have a few more. Paige Van Zandt, UFC Fox 222, or Fox 22, please do not let me die, as she's duct taped inside a bathroom, passed out on the floor, being put in and out of boiling hot water. These are her words, people. These are their words. This is all on the internet right now for you all to read. This is not my opinion. It's odd that the MMA media never picked up on this. UFC 225, Yoel Romero misses weight for the world title fight again while working with Zero Integrity George. Now, I ask you, what do you think Dana White and Ari Emanuel think when Zero Integrity George shows up with an athlete? Oh, there goes our main event. There goes a seven-figure, eight-figure PR campaign. There goes our pay-per-view revenues. How many main events? Khabib, Max twice, Yoel Romero. These are the ones that I just did a cursory review of earlier this morning. How many others are there? This is the crazy thing. And this is why I'm so hyped up right now and speaking with you, because George had the audacity to mention my name, and he's done so for so many years, but to come on your show and want to punch me in the face. Why don't you want to punch Ian Kidd in the face, George? He duped you, and I do believe that George had no knowledge of Ian's ulterior life, and that's the truth right there. But he duped you, and he did such mean, horrible, nasty things to so many people. And you haven't even written a statement condemning his actions or distancing himself from him. He's bragging about how he would wear the Fitness VT shirt and run reloads. George actually trusted this guy to go and reload, rehydrate his athletes during fight weeks. And Ian Kidd is all over the internet bragging about that. This is the person I call Zero Integrity George, because the few times I have called him out on it, radio silence. He had the opportunity to stand up and to condemn Ian Kidd's actions, to apologize to me and Chris Cyborg and Ray Borg and many of the other athletes, but he hasn't. Instead, he goes on to produce a DVD series, to which he says in his bio, George Lockhart has never had an athlete ever miss weight. And that's on multiple bios, on multiple websites, trying to sell his DVDs. Again, Zero Integrity George lying to the public to sell a few crappy copies of weight cutting DVDs when he does have, to my knowledge, the worst record in all of mixed martial arts when it comes to athletes missing weight, being hospitalized, and worst of all, saying that they almost died.
Will you accept his challenge to fight him in August?
Well, now here's the thing. Here's the funny part. To fight George Lockhart is a joke. But to get me to fight is going to cost some money. Because Ariel, I got money. I don't quite have Conor McGregor money, but I got more money than Tito Ortiz. And if you want me to come out of retirement, you better cut a big paycheck. And it's got to be a six-figure plus paycheck. And to motivate me, it's got to be a $500,000 paycheck. And for $500,000, I will take half of that and immediately donate that to support childhood diabetes and eating disorders. Immediately, right off the top, $500,000, $250,000 immediately goes to donate to childhood eating disorders. And I would ask George to donate half of his paycheck to whatever charity he goes to. But I will not fight George, Zero Integrity George, in his own organization. Are you kidding me? That likely won't even happen, and the athletes probably won't even get paid. What I would do is I would fight Zero Integrity George for $500,000 in the bare knuckle fighting championship. He says he wants to punch me in the face. Well, that's a pretty good way to do it. So that would be my counter. Zero Integrity George, he does not call the shots here. He has no power. He has no leverage. And Lord knows he doesn't want to fight me in the first place because I've already won so many times when we've gone head to head in our careers. But this is a PR stunt for Zero Integrity George to try and pull his business out of the dirt because the UFC and the Trifecta meal prep system has literally cut his business in half. His business is failing right now. That's really what's going on here. Now think about it. If you're running a successful business, are you going to go and run some small podunk mixed martial arts event? Of course you're not. Are you going to come out of retirement if your business is going well? Of course you're not. This is a PR stunt. George mentioned my name. He came up with this hocus pocus event, which is all BS. So if he wants to fight me, buddy, put the money in a trust. And I am down, but it will be in the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. It will not be in Zero Integrity George Promotions.
Why Bare Knuckle? Why not mixed martial arts?
Because I've got almost 30 mixed martial arts fights. I think that would be awesome. I would love, man, I'm an East Coast dude. I train every day, like I said, Ariel. I wrestle four times a week. I strike nearly every day. I'm in shape right now. It would be fun. It's simply because it would be fun and I could do well for charity. That's all. But honestly, I have more money than I need. My life is absolutely amazing. We bought my dream house on the beach. I live the most wonderful life you could ever think of. So in order for me to do it, there's got to be a reason for me to do it. I haven't done that. I think that would be awesome. And I saw the fights. I got to tell you, that Artem Lobov, Jason Knight fight, I thought that was a great fight. It looks like they're doing a pretty good job there. George wants to punch me in the face. Well, shit, man, bare knuckle. Let's do it. If that's what you want to do, let's do it. But to be associated with some crappy promotion, Zero Integrity George is going to run, and he's going to run that into the ground like he's run everything else into the ground. This is the CEO of his company, and he comes on your show to talk about a fist fight? That's beneath us. That's beneath me for sure. I'm a 43-year-old man, father of two, a businessman. I run three companies. I'm looking to send my girls to college right now. I'm looking to live my best life right now. And I got this weirdo loser calling me out to get in some podunk, barely amateur MMA fight. I wouldn't be surprised if it's going to be at the local strip club that he's going to run. Come on now. This is silly. This is ridiculous. You think Elon Musk is doing something like this? Bill Jobs is doing something like this? George, Zero Integrity George, he needs to set his standards higher like I have and many of the true executives. So I would not lower myself to his standard at all. He's so far away from where I am in my life. I think it would be a joke. But if they can come up with the money and we can get that set up, that sounds great. I have no problem with that. Otherwise, this guy's just a joke, man. He's trolling you. He's trolling the media. He's trolling the industry once again to just get some clicks. And he got some clicks because here I am talking about him. But I don't think he likes the things that I've said. And everything I said is factual. And everyone, please go and do your research right now. Look it up.
Okay. And so let me ask you, you know, you just brought up something that I asked him about last week. You mentioned the Trifecta Systems meal plans and the UFC trying to help the fighters with, you know, via the PI and this company to help them cut weight. You said it's affecting his business. Why is it not affecting your business?
He goes, I'm not in that business. When I worked with athletes, Ariel, I only worked with 5 athletes per year, and we called them career athletes. I have a team of registered dietitians, exercise physiologists, PhD candidates that work for me. My team, my business, my company, we pay full health care. We have a 401k with a 4% company match. I run a real business here. In fact, I run multiple businesses. Just because I look the way I do and talk the way I do does not mean I operate at the level of a zero integrity George Lockhart. What UFC has done, what the UFC PI has done, what Trifecta has done, they've revolutionized the game. And I'll tell you what, they've done this exactly to push someone like Zero Integrity George out of the business because it's cost the UFC so much money. How much money do you think it cost the UFC to have Khabib fall off that card versus Tony Ferguson, to have Max fall off 2 world title fights, to have Yoel Romero fall off the Whitaker world title fight? How much money do you think that cost them? Tens of millions? I don't know the numbers, but I'm going to say pretty much near tens of millions. What they decided it was necessary at this point to allow the athletes an alternate option. For the few $100,000 to the few $1 million it will cost the UFC per year, they will have a dramatic savings and they will be doing a benefit to the athletes. I love the program. What Dr. Duncan French is doing over there in leading the UFC PI is revolutionary. Though they are understaffed with regards to the number of athletes inside the organization, they are doing an absolutely amazing job. This doesn't affect my business because this is not my business. If a UFC fighter wants to get me on a plane to go work with them, man, it's going to be expensive. I've priced myself out of the market because I'm not in that business anymore. I work with Mirsad Bektik. I travel with Mirsad Bektik because Mirsad Bektik is like my little brother. I've been with him since his 4th fight. Now, people don't know. Why am I not as active anymore? Well, number one, because all of my work with the UFC athletes was less than 5% of my total income. I have multiple businesses and multiple income streams. I have the most successful online website in the history of weight cutting and weight management at thedolcediet.com. We have 4 number one international best-selling books, which continue to crush. Our cookbook was on the iTunes list for 36 straight months, iTunes top 10. We're doing pretty good. Working with the athletes was always a net loss for my team. Again, I pay salaries in 401ks. Working with an athlete 52 weeks out of the year for a 5% cut of their purse, if an athlete makes 100 grand that year, we only get 5 grand. Do the math. It's not that lucrative of a business. Now, George's business model and why he failed, and I said this early on, he diluted his service. Instead of working one-on-one with an athlete and being present with the athlete and knowing everything the athlete was going through and being attentive to his athlete, like I and my team have been, George tried to get as many athletes as possible and had one halfway qualified weight cut specialist under his team, and then get these certs, as they call them. These kids, these fanboys that they get who show up at UFC events. And this is crazy. This is another business model, bad business model he has. Gets these people from around the world that are just fans, charges them $1,000, $2,000 to learn how to cook eggs 3 feet from the toilet inside a hotel room. And that's how he's serving his food. He's getting these kids, these people who have no business being near a world-class athlete, and he's giving them a certification after spending a few hours with him in a hotel room, and then he's putting them out into the UFC bubble and allowing them to start helping and assisting with weight cuts. That is what's truly happening. That's why he has such a problem. Now, why doesn't it affect my business? Because that's not my business. My business is general population. Now, a lot of the athletes and a lot of the teams and even the promoters, they call me and I do consultations, but I sit right here at my desk. I sip my coffee. I wake up with my girls. I read my girls' stories at night before I go to bed. It costs a lot of money to get me to not be there when my girls say, "Where's daddy?" Daddy's right here. I have no desire to leave my home, to leave my family, to do any of this. I've been doing it for 20 years. That's what they don't get, and that's why I say the 6th grade spelling bee. I was the first to do it. I was the best to do it, and I will go down in history as being the only one to have the success that we've done in doing it. George, that's what bothers him so much, is because I was there. I did it. I have the integrity. I have the results, and now I'm living the lifestyle that I can enjoy the fruits of all that hard labor, all that grind. And Ariel, you remember me back in the early 2000s, you and your iPhone and me, you know, just making it happen, getting it done when there was no money. When I worked at Team Quest as a head strength coach, I made $32 a day, and also I had to be the gym janitor. I had to open the gym at 5 a.m. I had to clean the mats. I had to plunge the toilets. I had to wash out the showers and all that stuff. And for the opportunity of working with 40 of the world's greatest athletes as a strength coach, I went through the hard grind and now I'm here to reap the benefits and I give it back. You don't know, many don't know that my wife and I opened a nonprofit organization dedicating to eradicating childhood obesity and eating disorders. I sponsor a youth wrestling program, the same youth wrestling program that saved my life. I grew up in extreme poverty. My childhood home was knocked down, foreclosed on, knocked down and turned into a parking lot when I was in high school. I used to sit on the front porch. We had no heat, no electricity, no running water. I would do my homework on the front porch using the street light because that was the only light I had access to. So I know the hard walk. I know the hard grind. And that's why I'm here to give back and do what I do and speak as openly and honestly. Like I have no desire to work full time with athletes. I'm happy to answer their questions. I give more free advice and information than nearly anybody. My phone rings nearly every day. And I don't even charge for most of this stuff anymore. I'm happy to give back. George, on the other hand, man, in my opinion, he's a very greedy, misguided person. He needs to go back to his core and figure out what's most important in life. Stop calling good people like myself out, change his business model, and just start trying to finally do good for the world. And I don't know if he's able to do that.
Well, you said a lot, Mike, and I appreciate you coming on the show with such passion. You've laid it out. Is there anything you want to say in conclusion about all this? I mean, you put out your terms, you put out the number, you put out the promotion, you put out the rules, you put out the history as far as you are concerned. Anything you want to say in conclusion?
No, I just think, you know, it's unfortunate that Zero Integrity George, he does such things and his team has done such things. And the behind the scenes, I have a loaded phone of text messages from well-respected coaches and athletes and teammates and all this stuff, of all the nasty stuff that he does and says behind the team. And we all know it's true. If he would have put his nose down and just focus on building a reputable business and getting the job done and not diluting his services by bringing these certs in to work with these athletes, if he were to go out there and condemn some of the bad behavior that he's had, man, that's a way to start moving forward in life. I don't wish him any ill will like he does to me, and that's too bad. I don't wish anyone any ill will. I'm a very positive individual, a very positive person, but I will not sit back and allow someone like George to defame me and slander me like he's done so openly for years. And many of your listeners, and it was on your comments and it's on the Twitter, many people, friends of, let's say, in the community, have watched what George has said about me for years and usually in the shade, and other members of his team, to which I won't mention their names. Same exact thing. So he lives in this whole world of slander, and that's too bad. Just get back and focus on your core. Your business is failing because the UFC is now doing a better job at it. You want to go and beat them? Well, go find a way to compete with them because it's likely not going to happen. You know, these MMA promotions and whatnot, man, if that's the game you want to be in, God bless you. And really, good luck. Good luck, because there are good people. He named some names. There are good people that are associated with him and their team, and they look up to George. They look up to George to do the right thing, and now's the time that he does the right thing. And I don't expect any greater tit for tat. I don't think he's going to come back and say anything. I don't think he's going to come back and try and refute anything I said. Hopefully, this conversation here is the walk away. He's not going to come up with $500,000. Bare knuckle might come up with $500,000. Then I'll be interested. Outside of that, man, I'm just going to go back to my front porch, take care of my family, and start, you know, developing the other ways that I can help the community around me. That's what I'm trying to do. Is I'm trying to make this world a better place, one person at a time, one conversation at a time, one tweet, one text, one live feed at a time, and that's what I'm here for, Ariel.
Thanks for doing this, Mike. Congrats on the new house, the move, all your success. I appreciate you coming on again with the kind of passion that you brought to the table here, and we'll see what happens next. I appreciate this. Thank you.
All right. Ari, I appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
All right, there he is, Mike Dolce. So there you have it. Last week, we had George Lockhart on. He put out the challenge. Now you get the response from Mike Dolce. An interesting story that I did not expect to play out on this program, but he laid out a lot there, and we'll see where it goes from here. I appreciate him doing that, and that was certainly an interesting ride. All right, let's move along and go back to Bellator this past weekend. Jake Hager, a.k.a. Jack Swagger, the former WWE superstar. We have been on this journey with him since he announced that he was coming to MMA. He improved to 2-0. He submitted TJ Jones in the first round of his fight on Saturday, but this was an interesting one. Boos afterwards, a very interesting post-fight interview. There's a lot to talk to Jake Hager about, so let's say hello to the man himself who joins us via the magic of FaceTime. Jake, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure as always. So congratulations on the win, Jake. Were you happy with the performance? Were you happy with the fight overall?
Yeah, at first it was kind of hard to register what type of performance it was with the reaction. But once I got back and spoke with the team and especially watching the film back, I was happy with what I did on my feet. And I definitely saw progression between the first and second fight. Still got so much to improve on. But, you know, best hair in the MMA, we were looking good on Saturday night for sure.
So it's interesting because Saturday there was a Bellator event, there was a pretty stacked UFC event. Some of the biggest names in the sport were competing on Saturday, whether it was in Illinois or Brazil. But come Wednesday or so, your fight seemed to be the fight that everyone was talking about because that's when the press conference happened and that's when we saw the face-off between you and TJ for the first time. And everyone was, of course, commenting on TJ, who does not look like a fighter, certainly doesn't look like you, quite frankly, just looks like a kid off the street. Was that the first time that you had ever seen him?
Yes, that was the first time I had seen him, besides a couple of videos that I had found on my own beforehand. You know what? Hats off to him. You know, you can look like Jack Black. You can look like my Uber driver. But with MMA, you never know. It could be the next Tank Abbott. It could be the next Big Country. The guy definitely was endearing, definitely had timing and chemistry and went over that room that day, pretty much turned him against me. I don't like that. Don't take my spotlight. And I took a lot of the stuff he did personal, but he did it very well. And this is I think it should be rewarded. I think they should bring him back and see if he has anything more for the people.
I think they should bring him back as well. He turned into this sort of unexpected little star, if you will. The walkout was entertaining. I mean, the guy certainly has charisma, but I want to know, how did you, I mean, with all due respect, how did you keep a straight face? Because like that did look like just a fan, like even the hair, the hat, I felt almost like he was playing it up. How did you keep a straight face when you were facing off against him?
Well, lucky with me, in the moments that you see me in, those are real reactions. That's the only way I know how to do it. And that was a real reaction in that moment. Very annoyed. A couple seconds earlier, he pretty much said I didn't belong up there, called everyone else a world-class athlete but me. So it's easy for me to get hyped up for a fight like that and want to tear his head off because I had plenty of bulletin board material. I wasn't really laughing. This has been 8 to 10 weeks of camp for me. So it was time to get paid.
Did you feel, you know, after seeing the reaction to him and, you know, seeing the way he looked and all that, did you feel like this was almost a trap? Like in your mind, you had to convince yourself, like, I'm not fighting a fan here. This guy has had some fights. I can't take him lightly. Like, different looking than your other opponent. Did it throw you off at all as you prepared for the fight in the last few days?
These are all tests for me as I progress and try to jump the levels. I think the rule number one in MMA is don't take anything lightly. I don't ever see someone going into that cage playing games. And for some reason, I feel like the MMA community, MMA fans in particular, still think I'm playing games, walking into a cage, fighting another man. I'm playing games, cutting promos afterwards. No, this is all real to me. I'm very serious about it.
You know, it's interesting because I thought that the attention was good for the fight. It was good for you. It was good for him. I think a lot of MMA fans, sort of to your point, don't really understand what it takes to build up a fighter. Like, this is a kind of opponent that you should be fighting at this juncture. You're just 1-0 at this point. Like, who do they expect you to be fighting? Yeah, sure, maybe he's playing it up with the hair and stuff like that, but I didn't understand the criticism that Bellator was receiving, that you were receiving, that TJ was receiving, because this is what boxing is all about, right? Like, there's 10 TJ Jones before you get to, like, some of the more, you know, marquee fights, if you will. So I had no problem with the fight. I mean, certainly, you know, you look, you're quite the specimen. You've got a suit on, you're tan, you got the nice hair, and then, you know, it's a bit jarring to look at the face off, but I had no problem with the fight. I just want to say that.
Well, I definitely think it is a building block, and maybe I could have taken more advantage of that in the fight instead of taking him down immediately. I could have worked on my footwork, on my head motion, and gotten some real valuable cage experience on my feet. I was fired up, so I really wanted to execute the game plan, which is what I did. It was a little awkward in there. Based on his reactions, me trying to figure out how to get to that arm triangle. But I thought I thought it was very happy with the performance. I thought at one time you could even call me somewhat fast, but we're two heavyweights in there. You know, we're not moving that quick.
Okay, so you get the win, you get the arm triangle again. By the way, is that like your finisher? If we were to equate this to your previous employment, like, is the arm triangle your favorite submission maneuver?
Man, you're taking the thoughts right out of my head, Ariel.
Okay.
You know, you might see that become a very elite finisher very soon.
I like it. You did hold on a little long there. What happened?
Well, you know what? I had very specific instructions from Mike, who is a great referee, and he's a very big guy, great mustache. I wish I could grow that thing. He told me in the locker room, if I drop him with punches or if I take him down and I'm in position, to keep wrestling, to keep fighting until he gets me off him. He told me that, again, I will get you off him specifically. So in the mode, when you flip that switch to go into that cage, you just don't unflip that switch. Adrenaline is pumping. I think if you look at the video back, he actually grabbed his hand and he stopped tapping me altogether. So then it just felt like a rocking motion, almost like TJ was trying to squirm out from underneath me. I really couldn't hear any type of verbal commands. I had my head buried and really focused. I meant no disrespect to TJ. I did not try to hurt him at all. I know he has kids. He made that very clear. I want everyone to go in that cage and come out and be able to provide for their family, because that's why I'm doing this, because I have kids. And as a father, as a new fighter, I need to know it's the referee, and I do not have the luxury to think it could be over. That's where I'll get hurt.
Okay, because I think that some people thought, due to his comments leading up to the fight, that you were doing that to almost send a message. It had nothing to do with that.
Absolutely not. Okay. Absolutely not. I've been wrestling since I was 5 years old, and I've done so much of my work throughout my career trying to highlight the great sport of amateur wrestling. Now that I'm crossed over into mixed martial arts, it's the same way. I want to carry that respect, and I want to help highlight this sport as much as I can and do my part.
That being said, the crowd in Rosemont, Illinois did not seem to appreciate it because you were showered with booze, but I actually think that was somewhat of a positive, because I feel, and I hope you take this as a compliment, I feel like you're better as the heel. I feel like you rise to the occasion. I thought that was the best that we've heard from you since you came to MMA. You didn't seem to be taken aback by it. You were not caught off guard. Did you feel comfortable in that moment being showered with booze? Because it seemed like you enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. When you have the best hair in MMA, get ready to get booed. Since I wrestled at Perry, Oklahoma, we used to put 13 guys in the finals out of 14 weight classes. We would walk into gymnasiums of the regional tournament, and they would boo us out the building as they're doing the introductions for the finals, because we had 13 guys in there. So it was something I learned from very on to use and not let me affect me. It's always fun getting that type of reaction, because it's just so much to go off of. And in that moment, I was reacting very honestly. I wear my heart on my sleeve in that cage. I can't turn it off because I'm already at such a high level. That was real. And that's one thing you'll always get from me. I'm going to tell you what I think.
I throw out the disclaimer that this is somewhat of a family show before asking this question. What is a phoner?
A phoner, it's a fight boner.
Okay. And where did you come up with this?
Well, you ever been new car shopping, you know, and you see a car that you really, really need? Well, that's a coner, you know?
Okay. And I did not know that.
If you're really hungry for some pastrami on rye, you know, you got another poner right there, you know, just kind of work with me. This is not coming from me. This is what the kids are doing. Okay. Oh. I'm just trying to keep up with what's hip. So I'm told.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. I've never heard this. Yeah. So this is what your kids are saying these days?
No. My kids are angels. How dare you?
they would never
speak like this.
Oh, you're talking about like the high school kids, the adolescents.
The cool kids. Okay. The cool kids at the lunch table.
And your kids aren't cool? Is that what you're saying?
Come on. They're They're very cool. They're the, you know, we're a model family. I know, if you've seen pictures, I've seen my wife, Ariel, and so you find her very attractive. She only makes beautiful kids.
That's right.
I'm not too bad myself.
Yes, that's right. Oh, this is great. You're here. Has anyone ever compared you to Biff Henderson from Back to the Future?
It's Biff Tanner.
Biff Tanner.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, I blew it. Has anyone ever compared you? Clearly someone has.
Listen, once you make like a screen door and get out of here, all right? I have never heard that comparison in my life. No one has ever said I look like Biff Tanner and Gary Busey had a kid who could fight. No one's ever said that.
Really? Are you being serious right now?
Well, yeah, no, I'm joking. Of course I've heard that. look at these teeth, man. Bite your head off.
Oh, my God. This is amazing. That's why, I mean, Biff is the ultimate. Why did I say Biff Henderson? Biff Henderson is former stage manager of David Letterman, I think. Biff Tanner, that is you. You are the perfect heel. And though I want to mention this, you're not playing a character in there, right? Like, it's important because even Morrow and John McCarthy were sort of debating this afterwards. Like, that's all 100% real. You're not going in there thinking that I'm going to play this character, correct?
Well, listen, you'd be missing an opportunity if you had that type of exposure, that type of mic time, and you didn't take it as a chance to further your brand, because that's what we all are in there. We are our own brands, and we want to represent it in a way that makes money and that people want to see. Am I playing a character? No, I was pissed off right then and there. Like I said earlier, I feel like a lot of these MMA fans think I'm playing games, like I'm not real. So it's something that I'm working with and definitely gets under my skin, and I'll work on in the future, because we want emotional content, not anger.
Yes, I love this. All right, so now we're 2-0. By all accounts, it seems like the Bellator brass very happy with you. You seem to be happy with them. Are they treating you well?
Yes, very happy. I mean, what's not to like? 2-0, got two fights in the first 5 months of 2019. I looked to have two more by the beginning of 2020. Really want to make my progression. They're giving me all the tools necessary right now. And as we go further, I think the sky's the limit, because they have so many other great guys in the locker room, not just me. Team Red last Saturday night was really, really impressive, with Claxton and AJ McKee and Douglas Lima. It almost felt like a high school duel as we were changing in that locker room, because we had the red guys in one locker room and the blue guys in another locker room. I was like, oh, this would be a great television show. And we have teams and team championships and MVPs of the season. I think it'd be pretty cool for MMA to get into that. It was a lot of fun to be in there. Because I'm always learning from these guys. I'm the new guy, and I always remind myself of that. And I'm learning, and I'm getting better. But don't be mad at me when I jump levels and all of a sudden I'm better than a lot of them. So it's something that's going to happen very quick, because I am so passionate about getting better.
So you want to fight two more times this year? Is that accurate?
Yes.
Wow. And so are we still full-time MMA, no more wrestling?
Yes. Full-time MMA, it's just easier right now, 6 days a week, to be in there and training and not have to worry about any soreness from airplane rides or bumps and bruises. I will have about 1 to 2 wrestling events a month in the summertime, but other than that, it's going to be really focused on getting better, improving that ground game, taking out all the holes, getting these feet work moving, get rid of this other left foot I have, you know, increase my speed, increase my agility, increase my strength. I weighed in at 239. I definitely want to put on 10 pounds. I want to be in the 249, 255 range. Still keep my motion, still keep my conditioning, and still keep this great head of hair.
And considering your newfound fame in MMA, I feel like if I'm an AEW, I signed Jake Hager, Jack Swagger, to just a sort of part-time schedule. I mean, this just seems too good to be true. Are we considering this? Have they reached out to you? This seems like a perfect scenario for you. Do you need me to make a call?
Those guys are awesome. It's really impressive what they're doing, and it's something I can definitely relate to, because Cody, the Young Bucks, they invested and took a gamble on themselves, and they bet big, And now it shows that they were right and that they knew something that was going to fall to the curve and really be ahead of the game. And it's definitely fun to be a part of how they're doing their storytelling and how they're really moving the needle for the first time in decades.
Have they reached out?
Want to be a part of it. We've spoken, and I think that will progress in the future. But, you know, maybe we should have them on here.
Yeah, that'd be. Is there an offer on the table? Is that what you're saying?
As of now, I can't tell you.
Whoa. What are the chances you make your debut for them later on this month?
Well, I think I would be, you know, I don't want to step in John Moxley's shadow. I think that's going to be a great debut for him. Hopefully, I'm still keeping my fingers crossed. That's where we see him at. You know, I think anything is possible. It's awesome, awesome to be a part of this. This is definitely why I left in 2017, because I knew that pro wrestling was going to have such big opportunities and new platforms for young businessmen who are serious and who are trying to provide for their families to come out and excel the way you want to and work with the people you want to and build your brand the way you want to, which is the most important thing. Whether you're a pro wrestler or a pro fighter, you want leverage. And this gives me the opportunity to increase more leverage for myself.
Yeah, but you said you want to be a part of this. It almost seems like you're talking in the present tense. Does that mean you are already a part of AEW?
You know, there's not a lot of investigative journalists on TV right now, Ariel. You're really, really getting good.
Thank you.
I definitely want to be a part of it. I have been really busy with training camp, so talks have not, you know, gotten to that point yet.
Okay.
Because, you know, like I said, I'm a really slow heavyweight and needs to work on his footwork.
Yep, but not his hair. Let's get the CEO of Ruby SE on the phone, Danny Rubenstein, to close the deal. I like this for you. AEW, some weekends, Bellator, other weekends. Business definitely picking up for Jake Hager. Well done, my man. Congrats on all your success. Final word, yes?
Did you see how good Ruby SE, Danny Rubenstein, looked on Saturday night?
I mean,
ladies, the best sports manager in the business. He went 2-0 that week with two fighters on television, and he's single. Ladies, come on now.
It's unbelievable. He dropped like 50 pounds. I saw him at PFL. He definitely is doing well for himself as well. Thank you for doing this, Jake. I appreciate it. Congratulations. Enjoy the victory.
Hey, not to drop a plug, but Pro Wrestling Tees gets the shirt right there. Thank you, Ariel.
All right, there he is, the one and only Jake Hager, a.k.a. Jack Swagger, now 2-0 in his Bellator heavyweight career. All right, let's go from a guy who's just making his debut in MMA, starting out his heavyweight run, to a guy who is certainly not starting out his heavyweight run. In fact, he is the former UFC heavyweight champion, the winningest heavyweight champion in UFC history, and the man who will get another crack at Daniel Cormier on August 17th, Anaheim, California. He is the one and only Stipe Miocic. There he is. Oh, Stipe, look at him. He's smiling now. Are you happy,
always.
Stipe? Are you happy now?
I'm always happy, man.
Well, over the past few months, it seemed like you were a little bit unhappy. Things weren't apparently going your way, but now you got what you wanted. Well done.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm excited. Can't wait for August 17th, man. We'll get my belt back.
What was your reaction when you found out that officially you were going to get it and not Brock Lesnar?
In shock, I think. It was kind of surreal, but I knew it was going to happen. Just being patient.
Why was it a shock?
Oh, maybe because it was like at 10:30 at night.
Oh, who called you?
So I didn't. My manager.
Okay, and what happened? What did he say?
He's like, "How much do you love me?" I'm like, "It depends what it is." and he told me what it was. I'm like, "I still don't love you, but thank you." I was ecstatic. Honestly, it was I was super happy about it, and I'm blessed and just happy and just can't wait to get out there and get my belt back, man. I don't like it not having the belt.
And so you said that you were shocked, but also you had a feeling that this was going to happen. Why? Did you never feel like the Lesnar thing was real?
No, I mean, it just felt like it just kept prolonging and going longer than it should have been. And just hearing stuff from the outside, I knew it was going to happen, man. Just had that feeling.
So now we're approaching 10 or so months since your last fight. By the time you actually fight, it'll be 13 months. But you have been healthy, right? I mean, it's not like you've been nursing an injury. You were just kind of sticking to your guns. Now that it's over, now that you actually have the fight, the bout agreement has been signed, how would you describe this last year in your life?
Amazing.
Really?
Honestly, I'm not having the belt, but, you know, and it's going to be even better after I get the belt back. But, you know, having my daughter and raising her and getting to spend time with her and not training all the time and going out of town, and it's just been great just watching her grow up. You know, she'll be a little over a year once the fight happens. So she can watch daddy become a champ again.
So in a weird way, the break kind of ended up being a good thing.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, definitely. It was a good thing. Definitely let my body rest, my mind rest, and just enjoy life for a change.
Were there ever any moments where you started to lose some faith that you weren't going to get this and started to contemplate what you were going to do? Because it really did seem like that's all you wanted, right? Was the belt.
Yeah, that's totally what it is. No, I never lost faith, man. Just, you know, like I said, I enjoyed life for the first time in a while, and you know, I'm loving it. But now it's time to get back to business.
If you didn't get the title shot, if they did go the Brock Lesnar route, if that really materialized, what would you have done? Would you have not come back?
No, I probably would have. I probably would have retired and become a singer or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
No. I would have fought. Of course, I love fighting.
Okay, you would have thought, but this is what you want. Because, by the way, that was very believable. I mean, your voice is phenomenal.
Let me tell you something. It's it's amazing. My dog will sleep every night.
You just have to do it. It's great. By the way, how was your first Mother's Day? Not for you, but for your wife.
I think she had a good time. I wasn't there. I actually was working.
What? What were you doing?
Yeah, I was working at the fire station.
On Mother's Day?
Yeah.
Jeez Louise. First one? Couldn't get the day off?
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was next week, and I got my weeks mixed up, and she told me not to take the day off, and because I was going to take the morning off, like the first shift, the first 12 hours, but she said, no, just go to work.
Wow.
That's okay.
What an angel.
So, she's amazing.
Are you going to do anything for Mother's Day, like belated or before?
Yeah. Oh, I got a nice present, so.
Okay. What'd you get her?
Can't tell.
Okay. Wow. Secret. I like it. Private. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Okay. So are you going to take a break from the fire station now that the fight is approaching?
No, I worked I worked 24 yesterday. I think I work again 24 this week. I got to look at my schedule, but no, never.
At some point you take a break, right?
Yeah. The week when I had before I leave for the fight, like a week before.
You'll still do 24 hour shifts like a week or two before?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Either 12 or 24 is one of the two, just depending what I pick. But, you know, I've gotten better with it. But usually I usually stop working probably like that Friday before the fight, like the week before.
Okay. The guys at the station were telling me that you were getting a little ornery, like the fact that you weren't getting what you wanted, the belt, you were pouting a lot, like you were getting to be a lot to handle.
Oh, that's a lie. That's just a straight lie. You know, you're funny, though. Good for you. Listen, how about the Raptors, huh?
Yeah, how about them? What do you got to say now?
Good for you. Well, nothing. I mean, of course you are. You know, LeBron leaves. You can't beat us now. I mean, you can beat us now.
Yeah, of course.
But, I mean, everyone, it's okay. Listen, you got to have your. Yeah, right. No, it's okay. We'll be back. I'm not worried.
Did you see that shot?
Oh, it was amazing. I knew it was going to go in.
It was incredible. Crazy. It was like a movie.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom. You know, like it felt like everything just paused there for a second.
I was like, "There's no way it's going to like." When I saw like the highlight, it's like I didn't see the game. But I saw the shot. And they said, you know, game winning shot, and I'm like, what? And then like, how many times it hit the rim and like did all the? I'm still in shock that it went in.
Yeah, the first game seven buzzer beater of all time. So yes, things are looking good. Yeah. Are you rooting for them because they're close to Cleveland?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. It's nice to have you on the bandwagon.
The men of North.
We the North.
We the North. Sorry.
Bow down to the flag, Stipe, all right? Pay your respects. by the way, I have a Mountie here somewhere. Do you know what the Mountie is? This is one of the more honorable. This isn't my Mountie. You see my Mountie?
He's like a police officer.
Yeah.
Right?
All right? Yeah. You think you're cool because you're a fireman. This guy, way tougher.
Yeah. I was with that movie, Super Troopers 2.
Yes, that's right. Or one. Yeah. Last week, Stipe, we had DC on the show. He's not a big fan right now. You know, you guys, in the build-up to your first fight, you guys were cool. You were buddies. I remember he did that show with you for Fox. You know, he went and visited you. But now it seems as though you're under his skin a little bit. He's not happy with the way you handled things leading up to this fight. I want to play you a quick clip, and get your response to what he had to say, okay?
Okay.
Here's Daniel last
the
week.
The whole time I said he was a bit entitled, you know, like, you know, man, it would have been different if we did not understand. You know, these are conversations we had with the company, like, yo, one of you guys is going to get to fight Brock Lesnar. And he was just as happy as I was, you know, so to make it seem as though I was doing something wrong after I was the one that won the fight, I just felt like it just was unfair a little bit, you know, and then just like, you know, every now and again, he posts a picture of him like punching me or something. I'm like, yo, what? You punched me. Okay. We fought. Of course you punched me. He's like, now I'm going to show you why I belong in a title fight. And there's a picture of him just punching me. We had a fight. Of course you have pictures of you punching me. There were like millions of people there. Like they all, millions of people watched it. Like they saw you punch me. Not to put the damn picture up of you punching me and acting like I'm wronging you or something. Like
entitled, unfair, posting pictures. What do you make of all of this?
I had no idea he was talking about. We had a company conversation. Well, I definitely wasn't in that conversation. I had no idea about the Brock thing until literally right before I walked out for the fight. So he's an idiot. I have no idea what he's talking about. He literally says one thing and then says something else. So I don't even listen anymore. But yeah, whatever. I don't care. I'm fighting him. That's all I care about. So he can say what he wants to say. He'll probably say something different tomorrow. And I don't know. Whatever.
Does he annoy you?
Right now, yeah, man. I mean, Jesus, like, one minute he says, I'm deserving, and if I don't fight Brock, he'll get the fight. And then he's like, no, you got to fight 3 more times before you got to fight, you know, for the title again, work your way up like everyone else. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You just said, I deserve it. I don't know. He's like a woman when they want to go eat to dinner, but they have no idea where they want to go eat. But they say they want to go eat somewhere, but then they change their mind. It's just never ending.
And so what is this? Because he mentioned this meeting that, like, Brock was on the table. You say that you were not a part of it.
No.
So when were you told? You said you were told right before you walked out.
I was in the locker room, and I think someone said something, and there was on the TV they showed Brock walking in or whoever it was sitting down in his seat. I literally had no idea, so I don't know what he's talking about.
But no one came up to you before that fight and said, "If you win this fight, Brock Lesnar is next for you."
Yeah, I do not recollect that at all.
What do you make of the entitled comment?
I'm entitled. Okay. Okay, good for you.
Because I think he's referring to when you said, like, I would have done the same for you. I'm the winningest champion, all that stuff.
100%. I mean, listen, I'm a stand-up guy. If the roles were reversed, he'd be doing the same thing. So I really don't care what he says.
Right. Am I accurate, though, in saying that you had a good relationship, but then it changed a little bit over the past year?
Business is business.
Right. You feel differently about him?
No, I mean, I don't really care what he thinks, what he says. I'm not worried about him. I'm worried about getting my belt back.
When's the last time you watched that fight?
Never.
You still haven't watched it?
No.
Not once?
Nope.
Will you watch it?
Yeah, probably here a little bit just to see what I did wrong. And you know I dropped my left hand at one time, but you know, it's got to keep my hands up and you know my eyes out of the way.
Do you remember it? For the most part, like the entirety of it?
I remember all of it. I remember all of it.
Okay. The general consensus seems to be that you were actually doing quite well and then maybe took your foot off the gas. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I don't know. I just maybe got a little more confident than I needed to. I mean, you know, I didn't think it hit that hard, you know what I mean? But like you said, it was right on the button.
Right.
I mean, I think a lot of guys hit harder than he did when I fought. Just, you know, it is what it is. It's a fight. Anything can happen. You know, kudos to him. You got the knockout that night.
Is it typical for you to not watch fights, you know, like a year later, or this one is a little different?
No, I just didn't feel like watching it. It just was like, there's nothing to, you know, I knew what I did wrong, you know, but I'm gonna go over and watch the fight, what he did, what I need to work on, and, you know, what some of his strengths and weaknesses I need to work on, all that stuff. But right now, I just didn't need to watch it. I was good.
In this day and age, you know, with social media and whatnot, it's hard to avoid highlights and things like that. Have you ever even seen the knockout?
My entitled self, yes, I have seen that.
Seems like you didn't like that one.
No, it's all good, man. Listen, it's a fight. Anything can happen. Like, listen, I've been stopped before, and ain't nothing new.
Okay,
a lot of guys get stopped. It happens. I mean, you know, I felt, like I said, I felt under control. I felt good, and it just didn't happen. You know, just didn't go my way. You know, I just let my guard down for a split second, you could say. I just had a lapse in my game plan, and boom, you know, I don't have the belt anymore. But now I get another crack at it, so we're good.
He's on the cusp of retirement, it seems. Would the perfect way to end all of this for you is that you're the guy who retires him?
That's fine with me. I'm going to be.
You don't want him to fight after this fight?
I don't really care if he fights or not. I'm getting my belt back. He can do what he wants after that.
I remember talking to Dominic Cruz when he got his belt back, when he beat TJ Dillashaw a couple of years ago, and I asked him if it was the happiest moment of his life. And he told me that the happiest moment of his life was when he realized that he didn't need the belt to be happy anymore. And so I'm wondering if you can sympathize with that. Like, was there a point where the belt was really something that meant a lot, and then you felt like, okay, I don't need this belt. I'd like to get it back. It would be great, but I don't need this belt to define my happiness.
No, yeah, no question. Like, listen, I love what I do. I love being the champ. You know, I love being there, but I'm going to get the belt back and be champ again. But, like, there's other things in life that make me happy besides being a champ. You know, it's not all about being the champ, but I work so hard. You know, I want to be it. But, no, he's 100% right. I mean, there's no question. But, I was thinking about the belt, just probably getting my win back and, you know, knowing I was a better fighter.
If you win on August 17th, will you will you let Dana White put the belt around your waist?
I'm not going to worry about that. I'm just going to worry about the fight, and then we'll see what happens.
Were you at all worried, considering maybe the frosty relationship, that they wouldn't give this to you, that politics were getting involved?
We're like best friends, you know? I mean,
oh, you're best friends now?
I guess so. I mean, I don't know. I honestly didn't worry about that, man. I was just trying to get the rematch, and listen, I got the rematch. I'm so happy. I'm like, you know, ecstatic, and, you know, just, you know, get back on the grind and ready to go.
When was the last time you spoke to him?
Oof, probably July 7th, 2018.
The day before the fight, or the day
after? Yeah, right after the fight.
What did he say?
You know what? I did speak to him. Actually, I did text him, but they sent us some stuff for my daughter.
Oh, that's nice.
So I did. So I said thank you. Yeah. Oh yeah. So thank you.
Oh wow. So you guys are friends.
Yeah. It's business, man. I mean, yeah, but he did something nice. I want to say thank you. I'm not a dick.
Wow. Okay. This warms my heart. You guys are back.
That's what happens, you know. That's what we do.
Okay. So maybe that was his olive branch.
Yeah, sure. funny.
Well, this is very exciting. I'm excited. How about your co-main event? You hear what the co-main event is?
No.
Where have you been? Working at the firehouse.
Yeah.
Nate Diaz.
I should know this. Nate Diaz. That's yes. And
Anthony Pettis.
And Cerrone. Pettis. I'm an idiot. Pettis, yes. Sorry.
Do you like that?
That's a great fight. That's an amazing fight.
Yeah. You also got Yoel Romero, Paulo Costa. It feels like they're stacking this one.
Yeah, I'm exciting. I'm excited.
You seem excited. Look at you. You're back, yeah. Stipe. Yeah. This is great.
Yay.
This is amazing. After the last conversation, I was like, Stipe's never going to talk to me ever again.
Oh, no, it's okay. Just, you know, give me a little time. I'll be fine.
Okay. Well, this is amazing. And anything you're going to do differently as far as training is concerned? Or is it the same old, same old?
No, I mean, just same old. Just, you know, work on, like I said, all my weaknesses and strength. You know, just like any camp, you know, work towards the guy you're fighting. And that's about it. You know, I'm going to bring different guys in, help me out, and, you know, get ready to become, you know, and new again.
You're really going to enjoy punching Daniel in the face, I feel like, this time.
100%.
Yeah. Because he gets under your skin.
I don't know if he gets under my skin. He just sometimes just some things he says, I don't understand why he says them. But
yeah, like what?
Oh, like I said, I was before. Like, he'll just say something, and then like literally like a week later, or not even the next day, he'll say something just like that was totally. I contradict himself there. You know, I really have no idea what he says sometimes. I don't understand like his logic with some of the stuff he says.
Well, things are really looking up. Not only for you, you got this fight. The Browns are the talk of the NFL. The Cavs just got John Beilein. They just hired the Michigan coach earlier this morning.
Yeah, I just saw that. Yep.
Yeah, how about that? I mean, things are really looking up for Cleveland. I mean, it looked like you guys were sort of, you know, down in the dumps after LeBron left, but all of a sudden, things have turned around.
Yeah, no, the Indians are playing pretty good right now. You know, yeah. They're working their way back. You know, we're good, man. We're looking good all around.
Well, Stipe, if I was with you, I'd hug you right now because it's so good to have you back. The smile is back. Hey. You found your smile. It's amazing.
Hey.
Welcome back. Yeah. Happy Mother's Day to your wife. Good luck in training. Thank you for doing this as always, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
All right, there he is, Stipe Miocic, the number one contender in the heavyweight division. he meets Daniel Cormier. Look, he's smiling. He's still smiling. I see him out of the corner of my eye. There he is. He's smiling. It's a little bit creepy, if I might add, but wow, this is amazing. He's back. He's happy. That might have been my favorite Stipe Miocic interview ever. Sometimes he doesn't give me a lot to play with, but today he was in a great mood. He was happy. He's got his title fight. Things are great. Things are good. Things are looking up. It's clear. He might not want to admit it. And DC is maybe a little too nice to admit it as well. I mean, they're both two of the nicest guys in the sport. But there's some bad blood there. They don't like each other. I think the road to this fight is going to be amazing. If they do a press conference at maybe International Fight Week, seems like that would be a good time, month and a half or so before. DC Stipe up there. Nate Diaz, Anthony Pettis. I mean, just those two alone. Throw in Yoel Romero versus Paulo Costa. We need to rebrand this. Remember back in the day they had the UFC pay-per-views and it was like UFC blah, 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 78, validation. UFC 125, resolution. UFC 241, bad blood. Bad blood. I know it's not the most, you know, original name, but feels like there's a lot of bad blood so far. Heard there's been some talks of maybe Brian Ortega returning on that card. Heard there's been some talks of maybe Ortega fighting Zabit. Far from done, but I've heard that's been discussed. So business certainly picking up for UFC 241. And I know a lot of you are worried about UFC 240. That's July 27th. We know that. UFC announced its full schedule on the broadcast Saturday night. UFC 240 is July 27th. It's the makeup pay-per-view for the one that got canceled in January, UFC 233. And I reported today on my Random Thoughts column, which gets posted around 9 or so a.m. on ESPN.com. It's something that I've really enjoyed doing over the last few weeks, and I hope you, if you've checked it out, have enjoyed it as well. It's actually quite therapeutic for me to get all my thoughts out before, you know, the show. And this week, there's no set number. This week I had 24. And so you can check it out every Monday to help you get set for the show on ESPN.com. I mentioned that July 27th, they were looking at MSG. Anthony Pettis confirmed that, and they were looking at Conor McGregor. It seems as though that is not going to happen, and right now I've been told that Edmonton is the front runner to host that card, but not yet official. But that has been what fighters have been told, managers have been told. Shout out to Nolan King, the young reporter who reported that last week, I do believe. And so no MSG. I also reported that they might be coming back sooner rather than later. It seems as though the July date is no longer in the works for Madison Square Garden. Speaking of Conor McGregor, he had his charges dropped earlier today in Florida, that case with the fan and the cell phone and all that stuff. So that is some good news, but no word just yet on when he could potentially return. UFC made the Pettis versus Nate Diaz fight. They also made Ferguson Cerrone this past week. So a lot of those familiar faces at 155 getting booked, some fighting at 170. And speaking of familiar faces at 155, fighting at 170 this weekend. As I said, the UFC makes its debut in Rochester, New York. And like I also said in my column earlier, there's that song. Play it, Jay. Play it loud and proud. Prelim starting at 5, main card 8 on ESPN Plus. So it'll be an early one. I love this card. It's a really fun card. Top to bottom, there's a lot of sneaky good fights. I really like that Megan Anderson, Felicia Spencer fight, but the one I am most looking forward to, the People's Main Event. This time, it's the main event. It's former lightweight champion Rafael Dos Anjos going up against former lightweight contender Kevin Lee. And now, without further ado, let's say hello to the Motown phenom himself, Kevin Lee, who's all smiles. And I wonder why. Life is good fighting at welterweight, I would imagine. Kevin, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on, Ariel? How you doing?
I'm doing great. Great to talk to you. How much different? Is it too early to say how it is affecting you or not? How much different do you feel on the Monday before fight now that you are fighting at 170?
I feel a lot smoother. I mean, I can go a lot harder, especially like today. I'm going to get in a full workout where usually about the Thursday or Friday before, we got to kind of tone it down and kind of save the energy getting ready for that weight cut. I'm just about the same size, maybe 2 or 3 pounds heavier, but it's going to make for a much smoother fight. I mean, I'll let you know for sure next Sunday how it go after the fight.
How much do you weigh right now? Could you tell us that?
I'm about 181. So, you know, it's going to be a solid 10 pounds as opposed to normally I'm about 179 when I'm cutting down to 155, which, you know, when you talk about that, that's like a 24, 25 pound cut. So for this one, it's going to be a whole lot better.
Man, this should be a breeze for you. Are you looking forward to fight week as opposed to dreading it this time around?
I mean, it's different. It's different all around for me going into this fight. I'm focused a lot more on the fight itself. So, you know, all the distractions and all the media and all this stuff, like I'm used to it by now. Like I feel like I'm a bit in the game a little bit, but I'm solely 100% focused on the fight. So I'm not necessarily taking it easy and enjoying it that much. I'm just ready to get in there and get it over with. And each day I'm just kind of like, all right, let's just get this over with. Let's get to the next day. Let's get to the next day. And then let's get to fight night so I can go ahead and do this thing.
How did this opportunity come about? Did you go out to the UFC and say, I want to fight at 170? Did they present you with it? How did it come about?
They approached me with it a couple times about going up to 170, and it never really interests me that much just because when I got my mind set on something, I really do, and it always had been that 155-pound title just because I felt like that's where I started. But then as things was playing out and as I was seeing the way the whole sport was kind of moving, you know, you seen a lot of other guys was moving up, and I wasn't going to be one stuck in the mud. I'm like, okay, maybe this would be better for my career and in my longevity. And when I started looking just at myself and how I could approach the fight itself better, it made sense for me. And then when they approached with RDA, I'm like, oh, that's a damn good fight. At 155, I was trying to give guys shots at a higher rank opponent, and nobody was taking it. But when they approach RDA, I'm like, okay, he for sure, he going to show up and he going to give me a good fight, which is what I really want anyway. I just want to fight. I didn't care who it was. I didn't care what way. I really didn't give a fuck. But when they came with this one, it made sense.
Did it also make sense because he's a former lightweight and maybe a little smaller than some of the other welterweights, so it's a nice sort of, you know, first dipping of the toe in the water, so to speak, for you at 170?
That does help. But, you know, I've heard RDA gets up above 200 pounds, you know, to 210 and stuff like this. Like, I've never been above 200 in my life. So I don't know. I'll see more on the actual fight night. Like I said, I'm more so focused on myself. I think our frame and everything is the same size. He might just, you know, get a little bit bigger in between off seasons, or he like to eat a little bit more than me, or however his body type is set up. So I don't know. We'll see how the fight play out. But you know, it made sense. It made sense all around the board. He's a former champ. It's gonna be my first time really fighting somebody who's already won that title. So it's going to be a good shot to see where I am.
So we just saw a picture of the stare down that you guys had back in Atlanta. How would you rate that one? What did you take away from it?
I can see, and this don't happen very often. Each stare down is a little different. Each guy's a little different. But I can see something in his eyes a little bit. You know, he still kind of got that fire. And even though, you know, a lot of people might look at it and say, you know, I'm the more skilled fighter, or you know, RDA's kind of on a downslope a little bit. I think he's gonna show up and he's gonna give me a fight. I can see the little twitch in his eye. I think he know he in for one, so I'm in for it too. And that's kind of the only thing I took out of it.
In his last couple fights, he has fought wrestlers, right? He fought Kamaru Usman. Mm-hmm. He fought Colby Covington. Are you surprised that he took this fight against you? Because it just seems like these are bad style matchups for him.
No, like I said, I mean, he's a former champ. And with this one, I mean, I really got to give him that respect. I think, if anything, that those are going to be experiences that he's going to try and use into going into this one. But, I mean, all around, I think I'm a bad style matchup for him. I'm not just going to be looking for one thing. I'm not just going to be looking just to put him on the ground. If he gives me that, I'm going to take it, of course. I'm going to take what the man going to give me. But either way, I think it's going to be a hell of a fight. That's the only thing I'm concerned with. It ain't going to be a wrestling match. We ain't going in there, and he ain't going to know what I'm going to hit him with. I'm going to give him the full tools and my full arsenal, and we'll see how the whole thing play out.
I feel like you really enjoy those seasonal press conferences when all the characters are there. I feel like you enjoy being in that setting. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's fun for me. It's fun. The whole thing is a little bit fun for me. You know, the build up and having all these – kind of back and forth with the guy, or just getting a look into the guy's eyes, And as a fan of the sport, you know, I follow the sport real close. I kind of enjoy myself, and I feel like I'm supposed to too. I mean, we up here, we get this opportunity of a lifetime. I feel like I'm gonna show me, and I really like put myself out there every time they have me do these type of things. And I enjoy myself with them. You know, I see a lot of guys, they sit up there with, like, you know, their head hanging low, and they're like just trying to get out the building. And you know, this is once, if you're not enjoying what you do, then what the fuck are you doing? You know, I enjoy every day that I wake up. I get to go to the gym. I get to punch people, and then and I get to show the world in a couple weeks. So I enjoy this type of stuff.
Okay, so you have this opportunity to fight against a former champion. This is great. I like the fact that you're fighting at 170 because I feel like it's healthier for you. I can't help but feel like perhaps the logjam, like it finally feels like they're starting to streamline things at 155 with Khabib potentially fighting Poirier and Ferguson Cerrone. But it just seemed like for a while there, like a bunch of you guys were just hitting your head on a ceiling. Do you feel like maybe there's a cleaner path at 170? You don't have to deal with all those politics, because 155 has maybe the biggest names in the sport, but it also has the most politics. And it just seems, I mean, like Tony Ferguson, for God's sakes, the guy's on like an 11 fight winning streak, still can't sniff a shot at the title. Does it feel cleaner for you at 170? Is that part of the appeal as well?
Yeah, that was definitely a factor in it. If my next fight was going to be at 155, I was going to have to sit and wait and kind of see how these whole politics and all this play out. I think a lot of it will clean up towards the end of the year, but I was just interested in fighting. I just wanted to fight as soon as possible. So it did help because it's a little bit cleaner. 155 might have a couple bigger names, but 170 has really got the bigger competitors, and they've got the better fighters, I feel like. When you talk about the champs, you talk about Khabib, and then you got Usman on the other side. I really feel like Usman is the more complete fighter. I mean, he's kind of got a very similar style to Khabib, except he's much bigger and he present like a little bit bigger challenge. So for me as a competitor, I like the biggest challenge. Khabib is still, that still would have been fun, and that's still something that's going to happen in the future. I think a lot of the guys at 155, we still got a future together. We still going to have a date. But for right now, 170 seemed like it's got the top of the top. And I'm going to get in there, and I'm going to shake things up, and I'm going to show them what I can do.
I know you told the media last month that you and RDA should weigh in at 165 to make a statement that they need that weight class. Is that still the plan?
When I show up tomorrow, I leave for New York tomorrow, and we going to, check in, and I'm going to get to see him. And, I kind of always kind of go out my way to see the guy on the week of the fight. I'm going to approach him with it again. I said something to him. He ain't say nothing back yet. I'm approaching with it. I'm gonna see where his weight's at. Are you prepared to make 165? And if he is, then let's go ahead and do it. I feel like if we do it, we can just take the initiative and just show, this is where we compete at the most healthiest. It's just gonna be a factor of if he can do it. Like I said, I'm sitting at 180 pounds. It's gonna be nothing for me to make 165. If he's coming in 190, 195, then go ahead and cut that weight and let's get it in. All I'm looking for at the end of the day is a fair fight. I really don't give a f- about the weight. We could fight at 190 if he wanted that. But, if it's a fair fight and we both weigh in at the same thing, then let's go ahead and get it done.
I would love that. I think that would be a lot of fun if you guys are able to pull that off, or even if you're willing to pull that off. Where did you train for this fight?
I might do it on my own.
Do it, Kevin.
I might be in that tub. I might be feeling it. You never know.
I don't understand why Dana's against this. I truly don't. I mean, they throw out these interim titles. This is a legitimate weight class. And some of the best fighters, like, I feel like Nate Diaz would be there, Jorge Masvidal, you would be there, RDA. Like, it's just big names, you know what I mean? And you all would be legit contenders right off the bat. I don't get it. Like, 195, I get the hesitation. There's not a lot of names between 25 and 25. In this case, it makes all the sense in the world. Where did you train? Like, have you found, the right set of coaches, home? Are you set with all that, with all the changes lately for you? Do you feel like you have found that? And if so, where?
It's been completely in Vegas. I did make a couple trips down to California to work with a guy, Sam Calvita, who's worked with a lot of guys and, strength and conditioning coach down there. And the man's out of his mind. He really is. He's the same guy that trained TJ Dillashaw for a couple of his fights. And, doing that kind of put me into that mode to where I really had to push and get it done. But for the most of the training camp, I've been in Las Vegas. Still, it's still over at Extreme Couture. We've really been coming into our own, and Eric Nixick been over there and really kind of taking over and kind of putting his self forward. And even though, you know, he doesn't have a whole lot of fight experience, he's really coming to his own as a coach. And, you know, I still got my staples, Dewey Cooper and Corey Goodwin. They still lead behind me. So we've prepared really good for this fight, and, you know, we excited for it.
Wait a second. So when you said that he's crazy, I didn't know which direction you were going to go here. Of course, he's taking some heat for the TJ story, but you enjoyed your experiences with Sam Calavita?
Enjoyed is like, you know, I don't know where you get, I don't know what you mean by that.
You like
it was
training
beneficial,
with him?
I say that.
Okay.
It was very beneficial. I mean, the man pushes you to a whole nother limit. To the point where I could see why somebody like TJ, he stayed with him and kept doing it and kept doing it over and over. You know, and I think he's moved down to California just to work with him. So I can see why he needed to be on drugs in order to get some of the workouts through. You know, me, I'm gonna keep it real with you, Ariel. It's the man pushes you.
Okay.
And I think even RDA has tried to go down there and work with him. And only did one half of a workout with him, he said, and couldn't do it no more. So wow. For me to go down there and kind of push through that, completely drug free, completely legal, and I'm gonna wear a USADA t-shirt next time you see me. You know, I think that's really gonna give me the edge in the fight.
Have you ever been to Rochester?
I went for the opening, for the media opening, and did a whole lot of media, TV, and, you know, the whole shebang out there.
People interested? People excited?
I think people are just overly excited for this fight in general anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I think people, you know, this has been one of those fights. It's been kind of the biggest fight for me, at least, even though I ain't been too much on social media at all, really. And, you know, I ain't really, like, start to look a lot. I've gotten a whole lot more attention just on a average day to day. I feel like people are excited to see this fight. They want to see me compete at 170, where I feel like a lot of people thought I should have been a while ago. So they want to see me healthy and fight somebody like RDA. So overall, it's going to be a damn good fight.
I know you're at 170 now, but I'm just curious. Did you watch the Ally Quinta Donald Cerrone fight?
Yeah, of course. I mean, how could this be a interview with Ariel without bringing up Al? So go ahead, fire
off.
I know you got 20 questions.
No, I just wanted to know what you thought about it.
I mean, the fight went how I thought it was gonna go. You know, I mean, the man got another main event spot because of me, so that's good for him. He didn't capitalize on his opportunity. RDA is somebody who's beat Cowboy twice and beat him in really convincing fashion. So I'm gonna make sure this weekend I capitalize on that opportunity on mine, because, you know, this is another main event for me. So we'll see how, you know. I'm just focused on me. Let me just say that.
We're not beefing again, are we? I thought we got over this.
We've been over it, Ariel. We've been over it. Until you bring up the same old, we've been over this. You know, but I do respect you, Ariel. I give you that. You know, not a lot of these MMA journalists and all that, they don't, you know, really put forth the effort into this, into the game, I feel like. You know, they kind of sit back on social media and, you know, a lot of I follow it real close. So a lot of the headlines I might see is, you know, Paige VanZant in her underwear. And I mean, like, come on, is this what we doing? Is, you know, if that's the reason why I don't be on social media like that anyway, because a lot of these journalists, they get lazy. So I only get on you when you get lazy and you want to ask me about Al every time you talk to me. If you want to talk to him, go talk to him.
All right.
Me and him got past history. It's in the past. I'm moving on.
Okay. I don't want to go down that road with you. I thought we've come a long way, and I thought we were in a good place. So I'm sorry. Let us end on this. I wanted to ask you about what you wore at the press conference, because I heard there was significance to it, the red and the blue. What was that all about?
Yeah, I mean, Nipsey Hussle had just passed away. Which, you know, that's it, right before that press conference, which that's just one death amongst, I think it just kind of signified what was really going on, in the community that I'm kind of looking at and I'm looking around. And I really just kind of wanted to show, and just overall, just in fighting, I just want to show unity and something bigger than what we kind of looking at. You know, I think a lot of people who are young are very lost and don't, don't really know how to channel that energy in the right paths, in the right way. I feel like MMA could be something like that. I don't think it's really branched off into the black community yet. But, you know, it's no point in this senseless violence in the streets. I've lost so many people that you know, just off of them not understanding what they're getting themselves into, with not understanding what they're doing, and not understanding the consequences behind it. You know, I'm a professional. We wake up every day and I put my body through a lot of torture in order to step in there on Saturday and really go to war with this man. And I don't know if I'm going to walk out on Saturday night or not. That's just the reality. I mean, you know, there's a very good chance that I will. It hasn't happened yet, but it's the truth of the matter. And I think that needs to be left up to the professionals. And you know, in the streets, it's just, why we got to do this? Why can't we just unify and really try and push things to another level and get bigger and better? And that's all I'd be trying to say. And I hope if at least one person see the message, and as least one person feel my vibe and feel my energy, then, you know, then the world would be a little bit better. So, I'm young. I'm still trying to figure out my own path, and I'm still trying to figure out the way for myself. But if I could show it to somebody who may be a little bit younger than me or maybe a little bit more naive, then why not?
Well done, Kevin. Well done and well said. I appreciate it very much. Good luck to you this Saturday. Looking forward to the fight. Kevin Lee, RDA, Rochester, 8 p.m., ESPN+. What a fight that is. Amazing stuff. Thanks for doing this, Kevin. Good luck to you.
Of course. Appreciate you, Aaron.
There he is.
Always.
We good. Motown phenom himself. And I'm glad we're good, because in the past, we had a couple issues there, but we got over it. Kevin Lee came out guns blazing on our first appearance on the old show, and we've put in a lot of time to fix that relationship, and so we're good. We're good. No more I Quinta questions, all right? I'm done. All right, one more guest, and let us end on a really big note here, because this past weekend, this man walked into Rio de Janeiro and beat one of the greatest of all time, certainly one of the faces of Brazilian MMA. What a performance during the fight and after the fight from the killer gorilla, Jared Cannonier. He joins us now via the magic of Skype. Jared, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. Thank you for having me yet again.
Oh, it is a pleasure. And I know that you just got back home, right? You just landed. How are you feeling? Are you jet lagged? Are you tired? How are you feeling?
I guess I'm pretty normalized. I just went to surprise my kids at school for lunch, and they're pretty excited to see me. So I'm back home finally. I was able to sneak in a quick shower before the phone call, so I feel a lot better now.
Okay. And what was it like when you saw your kids?
And normal.
Normal. They weren't happy to see you. You just came back from Brazil. You just beat Anderson Silva.
Well, you know, they're initially, you know, excited, daddy, and all that stuff. And then there's so much going on at lunch, you know, so many kids around. And yeah, so it just went right back to normal.
A lot of people at the school recognize you. Do they know what you just did on Saturday?
They do. A lot of people were watching and supporting me from afar. So thank you to Legend Springs Elementary for allowing me to come in and do, you know, continue to do, you know, parts of my job. And it's all good. You know, everybody in there loves and supports us right now.
And you don't work at the school, right?
No.
Okay. You mean like your job as far as fighting is concerned?
Yeah. Right. We have the embedded series come in, the countdown series come in. So, well, not the embedded, but the countdown series, they allowed us to come to the school with the countdown.
Wow.
So that was cool.
It was interesting following you during fight week, because you were vocal about the fact that your bags were lost, you didn't have your mouthpiece, your cup, you were frustrated. Was there any part of you that was starting to feel like, you know, things aren't working out for me here, there's things working against me, this is not going right? Are you that kind of person?
Not necessarily. It's become sort of, I guess I've become used to something going wrong whenever I leave the house, but I'm also used, whenever something bad happens, you know, something good happens at the end. And, you know, I was right on the money. Something really good happened at the end of this run.
And so, what is this typical for you? Like every of your previous fight, really? Something happens?
Yes.
Like
yes.
What? Either like your
somebody
bags?
Somebody gets sick.
Okay.
Not necessarily. This is the first time I didn't have my bag. This is the first time this ever happened. But somebody gets sick. You know, we get a phone call saying, oh, you owe us some money. You know, I'm like, well, we paid y'all. You know, something crazy. But again, you know, an imbalance, the universe created an imbalance just to rectify it at the end.
Right. When did you get the bags?
I got the bag Thursday evening, as a matter of fact. So I got the bag soon enough so I can put on some layers and get a good sweat on.
That must have felt good, right, when you get your bags after like a few days of not having it?
It was really nice. I unpacked the whole damn thing just to pack it right back up the next day. So
why? So why the next day? Did you move?
No. It's just that fight day.
Right.
Well, was it fight day? Oh yeah, it was fight day.
Okay, so things go. You get the bag. You're now in a good spot, and you're in Rio. You're fighting Anderson Silva. When you're in there, you know, I'll ask you the same question that I asked Alex Volkanovski. So much is made of the hostile environment and the crowd and things like that. Did you feel that? Did you feel like it was tense, that it was hostile, or once the fight is actually going on, is all that blocked out?
Well, absolutely. Once the fight starts, essentially, only time you really experience a crowd is when you're walking out. And but, you know, I really wasn't giving them too much of my attention. You know, I noticed it at first when I walked out. I gave a chuckle and a head nod, and I got right back into the zone. You know, I was trying to listen to my music. I couldn't really hear it too well. So, you know, I just made my way to the prep point. and then that's when it really kicked in. You know, we're about to get in here and fight. So, you know, talk to my coaches one last time, get prepped to go in the cage, you know, step into my domain. And, no, the crowd is non-existent at that point. Once you walk through those octagon doors, and especially once the ref says go, you know, only time I heard the crowd is when he landed a kick, and I heard they got all happy about it. I'm like, the kick didn't even hurt, you know.
Do you ever have a moment when the fight is starting and you're like, wow, that's actually Anderson Silva? I'm fighting Anderson Silva.
Nope.
No.
It was a moment, but like, I'm about to whoop your ass. So that was pretty much it. And no disrespect to Anderson. That's just the way I approach every fight, man. I'm not in here to marvel at who you are and what you've done. I'm here to break you down big time, you know, and that's what I'm going to do. Best of my ability. Do it to you before you do it to me.
Was that the game plan, to attack the leg?
Yeah. Anderson moves around a lot initially in the fight. So we wanted to, plant him down, you know, set his roots. Make him have to stop moving, maybe attack his legs when he realizes I'm not really going for the head. You know, in order to defend a good leg kick, you got to, what's the word? Hunker down, essentially. Mm-hmm. You can either check him or you can counter to discourage him. But moving away from kicks will only get you kicked eventually. So that was the game plan, to kick him early and make him sit and then run the hands after that. Once we realize he's starting to, just scoring, essentially. We were just scoring.
Right.
And scoring big. So it just worked out really well.
You're the first fighter to defeat Anderson Silva in the first round since 2003. So obviously this is an incredible feat. Did you feel like you were making a lot of progress? Did you feel like he was starting to give out, almost like, you know, an axeman, you know, chopping down the tree? Did you feel like something was about to happen?
No, I was just going to work, man. I was going to do it. I was going to continue to do it for however long I needed to do it. So I wasn't really assessing his energy bar, if I can call it that. I wasn't keeping an eye on his energy bar. You know what I'm saying? I was just going to keep implementing the game plan.
What did that last kick feel like? Where it almost seemed like, initially it seemed like his hip gave out, but then it seemed like his knee gave out. Well, what did it feel like for you when you landed it?
I can say it felt light. You know, he didn't want to take the kick, so he took the weight off of that leg, but it was too little too late. And when I kicked it, you know, it just took all the brunt of it. It's like, you know, people say those leg kicks are like getting hit in the leg with a bat. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what that kick was like. You know, it was all my weight, centrifugal force going into that shin, going into his leg. And he tried to lift his leg to try to mitigate some of the damage. But I kicked pretty hard. So, it worked out.
Could you tell he was done at that point?
Well, I knew he was done when the ref pulled me out.
Okay, that was when you knew.
I knew it. Yeah. I can't really be like, yep, he's done, and just walk away and then him get up and start fighting again. That's what happened with him against Bisping.
Right.
And, you know, and that's a mistake you cannot make against a guy of that caliber. You know what I'm saying? So I sure as hell was, I was going to get on top of him and do what I do. You know what I'm saying? Bring the pain from on high. And, luckily the ref was there, so he didn't have to take any more unnecessary damage.
So you win the fight, and of course the local crowd is upset, and I thought you played that perfectly. I love the way you didn't say a word. You let them continue to boo. You were clearly not very pleased with them, and you know, they were being rude, but you kind of expect these things, especially when it's involving Anderson Silva. But did that take a lot of, I don't know, control to just say, like, you just stood there and let them shower you with boos, but I thought it was the perfect way to shut them up in a weird way. Like, it was just brilliant. It was beautiful on your part. Was it hard though to do that? You just beat Anderson Silva and you've got all these people booing you like that.
No, it was not hard to do it. That was I'm not gonna say it was by design, but I felt the energy and I wasn't gonna let that negative energy just overwhelm me or make me react in any sort of way. So I was gonna, if anything, the egg is on their face. You know what I'm saying? I won fair and square. It was a beautiful performance. If anything, all the booing sort of overshadowed my performance. Uh-huh. I will say that. It kind of, in a certain way, it kind of overshadowed my performance. A lot of people talking about the booing, talking about the crowd as if they were, you know, the MVP of that match. When that match was all me, all day, you know what I'm saying? That was just a pure high-level mixed martial arts is what that was. But as far as the booing goes, it was fun listening to him go. I kind of egged it on a little bit, you know what I'm saying? At the end of the fight, I was walking around. It wasn't the whole arena booing at first, but it was a good number of them booing, not happy with the results. So I cut my ear, you know, like, what? What? You know what I'm saying? Because they were booing. Yeah. So I'm like, here, let's hear it. Let's hear it. And then they didn't like that. You know, everybody else didn't like that. So they all got, you know, like a pile, like I just stepped on a pile of ants or threw a rock at a beehive or something, you know what I'm saying?
But was there any part of you? Me back, sorry, go ahead.
And it takes me back to that scene from My Girl when the little kid gets attacked by all the bees.
Oh my gosh, Macaulay Culkin, that scene like scarred me for life when he died. The kid from Home Alone died in the beginning of this movie. I remember that vividly. I can't believe you just referenced that. Why the heck did you just think of that? Who references that in 2019?
Hey man, because I'm heartless, dude.
Oh my God, you like that scene?
It's not that I liked it, but it's a good analogy for what happened. You know what I'm saying?
Gosh.
I feel it is shit.
Let me tell you something, Jared. That scene scarred me. Like, how old were you back when that movie came out? How old are you right now?
I'm 35. That movie came out when? In 92?
Yeah, something like that. So I'm 36. We're around the same age. I was traumatized by the fact that the Home Alone kid, Kevin McAllister, just died from bee stings.
Yeah, well, I won't admit and say that I was definitely unaffected by that scene. That scene was very, it was traumatizing to some people.
Yeah.
But I know it's a movie, and again, to see that type of stuff is I'm sorry, I'm trying to work this camera. It was, to see that type of stuff is definitely can be traumatizing to some, but, you know, I've been dispassionate since I was a little kid, so.
Wow. I got to say, I wasn't expecting a My Girl reference out of you here in this interview. So well done. I'm even more impressed than what you did on Saturday. But was there any part of you that was annoyed? Like, here you are. You have a chance to talk to your family, thank your coaches, this and that. You can't even get a word out. Did it feel like they sort of stole your moment?
Like I said, they sort of overshadowed the performance. But no, they didn't steal my moment.
Okay.
I let them have whatever they needed. You know what I mean? I let them do their thing. And that alone will speak volumes of what I had done that night. You know, a lot of people are talking about that, and they will always have to mention my name whenever they talk about that. So on top of that, you know, a lot of people are on my side with it. So, you know, I got some new fans because people want to boo the hero of the day.
I got to say, though, I thought Anderson did a really classy thing afterwards. Him embracing you and bowing down to you despite being in an immense amount of pain. I think it was his way of telling the people, respect this man. Give this man the credit that he deserves. Did you take it that way as well? That was a really cool thing, I thought.
I thought it was really cool too. It was, man, I think that was huge. You know what I'm saying? Especially for a lot of people watching to see a guy of that level to, sort of acknowledge what had just happened. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, it's definitely an honor to be in there with him. And I have all the respect for Anderson in the world. And, even though I have all the respect for Brazil and the Brazilians, and you know what I'm saying? It's a different culture and they operate, you know, on a different frequency than what a lot of us here in the U.S. are used to. So, I completely understand their passion for their athletes and their role models, because, you know, when we're all kids and we have role models that we want to aspire to be like, I mean, that's big in our lifetimes. That can affect what we do, you know. And for them, you know, there's a big disparity between, you know, those who have and those who don't, you know, and that includes money, opportunities, and education, all that type of stuff. So to see, you know, people succeed, you know, people who they feel like these people are just like me succeeding, they makes them feel like they have an opportunity to succeed. And I mean, it gives them energy. It's tackling fuel, I like to say.
Any part of you feel bad for him? Like when you see him, he's unable to walk and he's limping, he's in that much amount of pain. Do you feel bad at all?
Oh, yeah, I definitely empathize with the pain that he was in. I can't imagine, you know, what's going on with his knee. You know, I don't know the extent of his injury, but I'm sure it was painful. You know what I'm saying? We all saw his reaction. And I'm definitely sympathetic to that. And so, I mean, with that being said, we all know what we signed up for when we get in here. And at that moment, I couldn't, like, be like, oh my God, I hurt him, when it was completely my intent to hurt him, you know what I'm saying, any way, shape I could. So I'm sorry that he has to suffer. But I'll just leave it at that. I am sorry that he has to suffer like that. You know, I would rather him not to suffer. I would have wanted a nice little right hand to land and meet him, you know, take a little snooze and wake up perfectly fine. And no pain. That would have been easier to palate. I think for the fans, that would have been easier to palate. So,
did he say anything to you afterwards? It seemed like you may have exchanged words. I don't know if it was too loud, but did he say anything that you heard?
We said a few things. I said, he said, "This is your night. Good job. Congratulations. I earned this." He said some more stuff too, but, you know, the feeling, and to be honest, the feeling was mutual. You know what I'm saying? I, you know, all the respect to him, you know, he showed respect to me and adoration and all that stuff. So, yeah, that's it.
So I know that you had to fly out last night. So you were there for a few more hours. Was it uncomfortable at all? Did you feel like the people were mad at you?
No, actually, a lot of the Brazilians came on my social media, and some, you know, who I got to meet, you know, face to face, were like, "Look, I'm sorry about the crowd," and they tried to explain to me why it went down that way and how passionate they are, and already had that understanding to a certain degree. And then when they brought that to me, you know, it made me understand even more how why they're that passionate, and and you know, it's water under the bridge. You know what I'm saying? If I ever fight in Brazil again, hopefully they will be more accepting of me, and we can have a good time that night.
So 2-0 now as a middleweight. Is there a part of you that wishes you did this earlier? Things are going really well for you. Two finishes as well.
Well, it all happens when it was supposed to happen, you know. If it would have happened earlier, I probably wouldn't be as good as I am now.
Right.
So, you know, everything happens when it's supposed to happen. And I'm not here to force anything and rush anything. You know, that's why the move from heavyweight to middleweight was the way it was. You know what I'm saying? I didn't go find no gimmicky diet to make this happen. You know, I already knew what I was doing to make it happen. And, again, you can't rush the progress. Otherwise, you're going to get either an overcooked piece of meat or you know what I'm saying? It ain't going to turn out right.
When would you like to return?
I don't know. You know, I separated my rib the week before, the Thursday before I had to fly out.
Whoa.
It was a costa cartilage displacement of the rib. And so my chiropractor told me that's about a 6-week recovery. So we're here almost 2 weeks in. So maybe another 4 weeks. And I did mention this to the UFC people, and they're going to do an. Hopefully, they'll do an X-ray to make sure it is what we believe, what it is. But it feels fine, you know what I'm saying. I'm not going to be doing any grappling for a while. So, but yeah, maybe August probably would be more realistic, more practical.
Wait, so
I would like, but I only fight like every 6 months for some reason. You know, I would like to get in there sooner, but now I have a reason not to fight as soon as I would like to. I would like to fight at least every 3 or 4 months.
Were you close to having to pull out of the fight because of the rib?
No. I was not going to pull out of this fight. I couldn't pull out of this fight. This is an opportunity. These are opportunities that don't come by often. And on top of that, my bank account would not allow me to pull out of this fight. So I couldn't last another couple of months without getting something.
How much pain were you in while you were training, cutting weight, the fight itself?
I wouldn't say not enough pain to make me break my mental focus.
Okay.
So it was bearable, definitely more. It was tolerable. I fractured a rib before, and it's definitely way less painful than a fractured rib. I had to pull out of a fight because I fractured a rib. But this is just where the rib meets the cartilage. So it's not as bad. Just not as much movement. I had some therapists and my chiropractor, Darren Hall, my therapist, Al Escobar. They were giving me good information and working on me as much as they could before I left, as well as the PI staff, Heather, who was down in Rio. She hooked me up with some heat cream that burned like hell all day long. And some other stuff, so that was cool. So it definitely made it a little less painful when I was making those explosive movements on the pads and getting ready for this fight.
Wow, I can't imagine. I've heard that it's incredibly painful. So, you know, a lot of respect for you for fighting through all of that. Is it like Anderson Silva's a big name? Obviously, he's not the champion anymore, but a big name. Who makes sense next, in your opinion?
I hate calling out. I don't like calling out.
I'm not asking call. Yeah. I'm just saying who makes sense next. You know, it's more of a friendly way of putting it.
Well, the winner of Adesanya and Whitaker. That makes sense to me.
All right. That's fair. Hey, why not? You just fought Anderson Silva. You might as well.
I know. He got a title shot after he decisioned Anderson Silva. I just put him away in the first round.
That's a good point.
So, you know, if one of them get injured, you know what I'm saying? We can do, we can run it. But, you know, whoever, you know, it don't matter to me. As long as I'm getting paid good money, I'll fight all of them, line them up.
I remember that great scene at MSG as you were about to walk out, that kid who pumped you up. We got the footage. His dad wrote to me, and I posted the footage on social media. Have you ever heard from them? Have you kept in touch with those people?
Well, they hit me up before, I think a couple of weeks before the fight, and I thought they said they were considering coming down. So I told them if they do, they need to hit me up, and I would have tickets for them. You know, they can get to I'll give them some real nice tickets to the fight. So, but I never heard back from them.
Okay.
So I just gave the tickets to, it was a security guard, Brazilian security guard I met down there. He recognized me. He was real cool. A lot of the Brazilians were really cool down there. And, you know, he wanted to go to the fight. So I said, you know, I'll give you, he was the first one to, you know, shake my hand and wish me luck and stuff like that. So here, I got some tickets for you.
Oh, that's nice of you. Well, I love the idea of you keep in touch with this kid and him following your career now. So, I'm sad to hear that he wasn't there, but you had a different kind of reception this time around Brazil, but it would be cool maybe in your next fight, if you're fighting in America, that he would be there as well. I thought that was an amazing story that played out at Madison Square Garden. I really appreciate you doing this, Jared. I know you were flying back, and it's stressful coming home and everything. So thank you so much for this. Congratulations. Can I ask you one last thing before I let you go? Do you think Anderson Silva should retire?
I don't know. It's not my decision to say whether he should retire or not. He definitely hasn't been doing too well in the division. But at the same time, he's still been fighting these top guys. And I've said this before, it's not as if he's gotten worse as a fighter. Everybody else around him has gotten better. Mm-hmm. So the landscape, you know, the landscape is harder to traverse now. You know, you can't just come in with, you know, a particular set of skills and expect to do well against everybody. You have to be willing to, you have to be malleable in the sport in general. And, you know, if he can't make the adjustments that he needs, then yes, he definitely needs to retire. Because other than that, unless you got guys getting paid a lot of money to you know, have a rough night at the office, then You know, that, again, it's his decision. He should, I think, I'm sure a lot of people are saying he should retire. But those are outside opinions, and the only one that matters are his and, you know, his family's to a certain extent. But his is the only one that matters, so that's up to him.
Congratulations, Jared. I'm very happy for you. Great performance. What a win. And I think anyone who's trying to take the win away from you and saying, oh, just because it's a knockout via a leg kick as opposed to a knockout via a kick to the head. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy. You won that fight fair and square. It's a legitimate victory. You caused that damage. It wasn't a freak accident. It wasn't him turning his knee the wrong way, slipping on a banana peel, so to speak. That was 100% all you. You deserve all the credit. Great game plan. Great performance. Well done.
Thank you. It's similar to a shot to the body. You kick somebody.
Absolutely.
You know, hit or punch somebody in the body. It's the same thing. The only difference is they're awake to feel the pain.
Yep.
So, people want to see knockouts. They want to see the most, brutal people, I don't know. They have a fascination with that. And those aren't really true martial arts fans. Those are just people who want to see a brawl or see a fight or some shit like that. And
we don't need them.
Well, they have their place. You know what I'm saying? They order pay-per-views and they buy loads of beer and UFC paraphernalia and all that stuff. So they have their place. But for the real fight fan, knows what they're looking at and knows what to look for when they watch a fight. So
enjoy the win. Thank you for doing this.
You.
Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. There he is, Jared Cannonier joining us. A finish that was somewhat reminiscent of Tyron Woodley against Carlos Condit, you'll recall, back at UFC 171. Very reminiscent to that. There's nothing wrong with a finish that comes from a kick to a leg. That's the exact same thing, as he said, to a kick to the body, kick to the head. 100%. That's not a freak thing. It's not a sad thing. It's part of the game. He did it. He earned it. Well done, Jared Cannonier. Three quick things before I go. And it has been such a fun day here on the program. Thank you to all our guests. That was our last interview of the day, and I thought everyone was tremendous today. So thank you very much to all the guests. Thanks to all of you who tuned in. Covered my first PFL event last Thursday. I enjoyed it very much. A bit of a different scene. They're still trying to figure things out. Crowd wasn't the best, but they have a different kind of crowd. They have actually this like mosh pit of people. Like there's no cage side seats. They've just got this cage side cafe where everyone just hangs out and drinks beer and eats. And it was just fun to be there. It was a different kind of event. It was a little different as far as the vibe is concerned, but I enjoyed it. Of course, the big story was Kayla Harrison winning dominant fashion again, but leaving while bawling, crying. She's put an immense amount of pressure on herself, and she's a two-time Olympic gold medalist, so you'd expect that out of her. She's the face of the promotion. I don't think that makes her weak. I don't think that makes her soft. I don't think that makes her a questionable fighter as far as her psyche, her mental fortitude is concerned, her mentality is concerned. I actually think that it's admirable, the fact that she's okay with putting out her emotions. It does make you wonder a little bit how she will react when she loses, but we'll cross that bridge later. For now, though, I think it just goes to show how seriously she's taking this and how much she wants to look good and win and prove to everyone that she is worthy of all this hype. Nice win for Sarah Kaufman, Ray Cooper. It was a fun event. I'm looking forward to the next one in a couple weeks. Also, happy trails to Tom Duquesnoy. The Fire Kid announced his retirement somewhat surprisingly yesterday, 25 years young. The Frenchman is still, in my opinion, one of the best bantamweight prospects in the sport, but he's done, at least for now. He's won 7 of his last 8. Someone close to me told him that they think this is it for him. A little surprising. I reached out to him. He said he was on vacation and that perhaps he'd come on the show in the near future. So I look forward to talking to Tom about why he has decided to do this. And finally, I just wanted to say one last time, I said it on Saturday, but I just wanted to send my condolences to the family of Harold Letterman, who passed away, of HBO Boxing, a staple of the fight game. He was their celebrity, if you will, after a long time, a famous judge who would pop on after every 3 rounds during the broadcast. It was always a lot of fun to imitate him with my brother as we were getting ready for fights. His famous line when Jim Lampley would throw it to him, "Okay, Jim, 29-28, Arturo Thunder Gatti. Jim, I gotta tell ya." And then he would go and do his thing. I always would imitate that. It wasn't the best imitation, but that was my Harold Letterman, a true giant of the fight game. And it was very sad right before the Brazil event to hear of his passing. 79 years old, he passed away due to cancer. And it just felt It felt a little heavy on Saturday watching a fight. I know it was an MMA, and I know MMA is a relatively young sport. I don't know if we'll ever have a character like a Harold Letterman in our sport. I mean, boxing is just perfect for characters like him. Truly one of a kind, so I just wanted to extend my condolences to his family and say that I'm very sorry for their loss. All right. With that, we shall say goodbye. Again, it has been a fun day, and the fun continues this week. So much, as always, in the works in the world of MMA, and of course UFC in Rochester on Saturday. Sage Northcutt making his ONE Championship debut this weekend as well. Those are the notable things happening this weekend. Tomorrow, I don't know if you heard, but tomorrow my New York Knicks are going to get the number one pick in the NBA draft. They're going to draft Zion Williamson, and then Kevin Durant's going to sign, and then Kyrie Irving's going to sign. It's going to be great. So I just want to let you guys know that the next time we speak, it's going to be a whole different ball game for my New York Knickerbockers. Stipe thinks I'm a Raptors guy, but I'm really a Knicks guy. I just don't want to burst his bubble. Anyway, thanks to all of you who tuned in. Thank you to all our guests. Thank you very much to Alexander the Vulcan. No, not the Vulcan, the great Volkanovsky. It's been a long day. Thank you very much to Tatiana Suarez. Good luck to her on June 8th, UFC 238. Thank you very much to Douglas Lima, and congratulations to him. And I got his back. 50 Cent, we're coming for you, all right? Show the man some love. Thank you very much to Anthony Pettis. Holy smokes, that was amazing. Thank you very much to Mike Dolce. Holy smokes, that was wild as well. Thank you very much to Jake Hager. Congrats to him. Thank you very much to Stipe Miocic, who was also great. Good luck to Kevin Lee. Thank you, Jared Cannonier. Back next week. Same time and place. Until then, I say peace.